ജയം വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം നിതില പ്രവിഷ്ട വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശരദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേംസഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ട ഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനിക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമിക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമിക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ് പുരിധാമിക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗോ പ്രേമാനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദ അസംബ്ലി ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദ അസംബ്ലി ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദ അസംബ്ലി ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരുവൻ ശ്രീ ഗൗരാംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീ പ്രഭുപാദ നമോ വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേശ്വരി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമി നിധി നാമിനി നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവി ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണി എന്ന വിശേഷൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യ ദേശദാരിണി ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ
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 ഓം അജ്ഞാനതിമിരാന്ധസ്യ ജ്ഞാനാഞ്ജനശലാകയ ചക്ഷുരുന്മീലിതം യേന തസ്മൈ ശ്രീഗുരവേ നമഃ ശ്രീചൈതന്യമനോഭീഷ്ടം സ്ഥാപിതം യേന ഭൂതലേ സ്വയം രൂപകദാ മഹ്യം ദദാതി സ്വപദാന്തികം വന്ദേഹം ശ്രീഗുരു ശ്രീയുതാപദകമലം ശ്രീഗുരും വൈഷ്ണവാംശ്ച ശ്രീരൂപം സാഗ്രജാതം സഹഗണരഘുനാഥാന്വിതം തം സജീവം സാദ്വൈതം സാവധൂതം പരിജനസഹിതം കൃഷ്ണചൈതന്യദേവം ശ്രീരാധാകൃഷ്ണപദാൻ സഹഗണലളിത ശ്രീവിശാഖാൻവിതാംശ്ച നമാഹോം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്തസ്വാമിനിതി നാമിനീ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതിദേവി ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണി നിർവിശേഷൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യാദേശധാരിണി നമാഹോം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി ഇതി നാമിനീ ശ്രീവർഷഭാനവീ ദേവി ത്രൈതായ കൃപാബ്ധയേ കൃഷ്ണസംബന്ധ വിജ്ഞാനദായിനേ പ്രഭവേ നമഃ മാധുര്യോജ്വല പ്രേമാദ്യ ശ്രീരൂപാനുഗഭക്തിദ ശ്രീഗൗരകരുണാശക്തി വിഗ്രഹായ നമോസ്തുതേ നമസ്തേ ഗൗരവാണി ശ്രീമൂർത്തയേ ദീനധാരിണേ രൂപാനുഭൂത വിരുദ്ധാവ സിദ്ധാന്തദ്വന്ദ്വഹാരിണേ നമോ ഗൗരകിഷോരായ സാക്ഷാത് വൈരാഗ്യമൂർത്തയേ വിപ്രലംബരസാംബോധേ പദാംബുജായതേ നമ നമോ ഭക്തിവിനോദായ സച്ചിദാനന്ദനാമിനേ ഗൗരശക്തിസ്വരൂപായ രൂപാനുഗവരായതേ ഗൗരാവിർഭവഭൂമേ സ്വം നിർദ്ദേഷ്ട്വാ സ ജനപ്രിയാം വൈഷ്ണവാ സർവഭൗമ ശ്രീ ജഗന്നാഥായ ദേ നമ വംശകൽപതരുഭ്യശ്ച കൃപാ സിന്ധുഭ്യേവ ച പതിതാനാം ഭാവനേഭ്യോ വൈഷ്ണവേഭ്യോ നമോ നമ നമോ മഹാവദന്യായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രേമ പ്രദായതേ കൃഷ്ണായ കൃഷ്ണചൈതന്യനാമ്നേ ഗൗരദ്വിഷേ നമ പഞ്ചതത്വാത്മകം കൃഷ്ണം ഭക്തരൂപസ്വരൂപകം ഭക്താവതാരം ഭക്താഖ്യം നമാമി ഭക്തശാത്വികം ഹേ കൃഷ്ണകരുണാ സിന്ധോ ദീനബന്ധോ ജഗൽപദേ ഗോപേശ ഗോപികാകാന്ത രാധാകാന്ത നമോസ്തുതേ ചേതം സുരദൗപാംഗോർ മമ മന്ദമദേർഗതി മത്സർവസ്വപദാംബോജോ രാധാ മദനമോഹനവും ദിവ്യവൃന്ദാരണ്യകൽപദ്രുമാദൗ ശ്രീമന്ദ്രത്നാകര സിംഹാസനസ്ഥൗ ശ്രീമന്ദ്രാദാ ശീലഗോവിന്ദദേവോ പ്രേഷ്ടാളിഭിഃ സേവ്യമാനോ സ്മരാമി ശ്രീമന്ദ്രാസരസാരംഭി വംശീ വടതടസ്ഥിതാ കർഷാൻ വേണുസ്വനേർഗോപേർഗോപിനാഥ ശ്രീയേസ്തുനാം
तप्तकाञ्चनगौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So, we have started this 12th chapter, isn't it? The Bhakti Yoga. Before we continue, I'll mention one or two things. You know the Easter holidays, we have the 4 days, Saturday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday and Monday. So those 4 days, we have booked the hall at Center Point. So that means that Saturday class will have it there. Friday, Saturday, Sunday and Monday, 4 days. From 7 to 12, we have the program for that Krishna's childhood pastimes, it's written, but actually it is Krishna's Rasa dance where we are at the moment, where we stopped in the during the Christmas time. We'll continue from that and finish that chapter 33. We are on 29 now at the moment. So 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 5 chapters, Rasa dance, we'll discuss that in those 4 days. If we don't finish in that time, then we'll go on to the Jubilee time when we have 4 days again. We get Monday and Tuesday, and then we have Saturday, Sunday. But that Saturday and Sunday, we will have the regular way, just like Saturday here and Sunday at Center Point. But that will be naturally in the afternoon, because that's the time. But Monday and Tuesday, we'll have the program at Center Point. In the morning, yes, 7 to 12. Then for the July program, we have booked 2 weeks at Center Point, and hopefully by then we will finish this, finish the Rasa dance, Krishna's Rasa dance, and then we will start with some special parts like Bhajagovindam prayers. Bhajagovindam, if we can do that, it will be good, because it's a very special Sotram. Prabhupada is quoted many times from Bhajagovindam, and also it opens up the eyes a lot in our consciousness, to open up the consciousness. It's important to study such literature. So Bhajagovindam, we can discuss that in the summertime if we get that. That will also take up. There's only 31 verses in Bhajagovindam, which you can download if you want to read it from the web. It's available plenty. And you can see the verse that starts with Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam, Govindam, Bhajamodamate, those verses. So we'll discuss those verses in the summertime if we get there that far. And then we would see how things go. Depending on when we finish, we can continue with Shruti Gita, the prayers, personified prayers in the Bhagavadam, Shruti Gita, which is personified Vedas, prayers to Krishna. That's an important part in the Srimad Bhagavadam. Also, glorifications like, different as I mentioned before, there are different glorifications in the Bhagavatam which are very important from the point of view that Bhagavatam has got katha, the story part of it, then there is glorifications and there is direct instructions. In 3 levels, Bhagavatam is understood. The topmost, of course, topmost in the sense that the very important part is direct instructions from Krishna to Uddhava at the very before leaving this planet. They are important,
But then the glorifications of the great devotees also is important. So there we have Muchukunda's prayers, Prahlada's prayers, Dhruva's prayers, and similarly different prayers, where a lot of philosophical understanding of Krishna consciousness is brought out in that, which we will take it up after that. And we will of course continue with Bhagavad Gita as usual here on Saturdays. Every Saturday we'll continue with the Bhagavad Gita. So let's hope how things go. We'll see along with that. Depending on, sometimes there is a little bit of problem with getting a booking at Center Point, perhaps. There is, because they have a lot of other people also who are booking there. But if there is any problem, then we will look for another place. Also, we have something else in mind to look at. We'll see, we'll get to that later. So what I'll do is, I have here those dates for July, because the Easter holidays and the Jubilee holidays, they are pretty clear, it's not difficult. But on the July holidays, here is the times for you, for the prasadam's timings and all that. So wherever we have a program starting at early, we'll have prasadam after the program. But when we start in the afternoon, then of course you'll have prasadam and come for the program later. I'll leave a copy with you also, Vishnu, if you can want to hang it up there. That is for the July program. And so, going back to Bhakti Yoga, such an important chapter, and so much to know about certain things Krishna has pointed out there. So, as I mentioned last Saturday, the whole concept of sannyasam has come from Sushupti. That's important to know. Where did they all find out all these things? It didn't come from the sky. It came from proper deep understanding. That whole concept of sannyasam has come from Sushupti. How did they understand that? Because in Sushupti state, when you leave your body, leave your mind, leave your intelligence, leave your ego, and when you got rid of everything, you are happy. And that is a strong indication to us that actually body, mind, intelligence are just a burden on us. It's not anything better than that. It's just creating another, to drag this body whole life, here, there, everywhere, and then eventually it leaves you and go. And to maintain this body, so much endeavor from our side. So that is why it says there that the Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, in the three states, when you come to the Sushupti state, you realize this, that how much a burden this body is, how much a burden the mind is, and the false ego also. So a strong indication to us that in the absence of false ego, you felt happiness in the Sushupti state, where there was no ego. Na kartratvam na bhoktratvam va. I'm not the enjoyer, I'm not the doer either. But as soon as you come back to the vacant state, they all come back to us and we fall into their grip straight away. So, so here, and also you notice that all the things what you want to get rid of in the vacant state, for example, identification of the body as Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grahastham, Vanaprastham, Sannyasam. Similarly, to think that I am rich, I am poor, I am Indian, I am American, or I am black and white, I am this, I am that. Like this, so many identifications has been stacked up inside as false identifications, isn't it? And it is not possible to get rid of them in the vacant state. But you see, when you go into the deep sleep state, they just leave you and go. So in other words, false identification, everything goes away, and our spiritual identity is much more predominant in that stage. In that sense, kim tatra parishishyate. Upanishad says, kim tatra parishishyate. What is left there? And that's Krishna. What's left there? That's Krishna. At that time, when everything else is gone away. So, you will also notice the same from there, Krishna has got the name Shesha. Because when you have rejected everything, when you have discarded everything, what is still left? That's Krishna. What is still left? That's Krishna. That's how the name Shesha comes to Krishna. Isn't it? Shesha Samya. Who says this? Devaki says this. Only if you very carefully read Bhagavatam, you will notice these things. If you look into the 10th canto, you will see there in the 3rd chapter, Devaki Studi. Devaki's glorifications of Krishna. In the 10th canto, in the 3rd chapter, where she addresses Krishna like that. She addresses Krishna in that way. Says to Krishna that that Devaki's prayers is Nashte loke dvarardhavasani Mahabhudeshu adibhudam gadeshu Vyakte avyaktam kalavegene yate Bhavane kashishyade shesha samya. Where did Devaki get all this idea from? Devaki is saying to Krishna, Bhavane kaha shishyade shesha samya. When everything, satamatram, in the previous verse she said, satamatram nirvishesham niriham, sattvam sakshal vishnu adhyatma divam. Satamatram, satta means the essence of everything. Essence of everything else is the soul. The soul is the essence, Krishna, the soul. From there she gets on to this next point. Vyakte avyaktam kalavegena yate bhavaneka shishyade shesha samyam. After referring to all the material elements, and also when they all become unmanifested, they become manifested and they become unmanifested, and at the end, Krishna, Bhavaneka Shishade Shesha Samya. At that time, only who remains? Krishna remains. The soul remains. The spiritual potency remains. That's how Krishna got the name as Shesha. Shishade Shesha Samya. So that's an important point to remember. So, why is it like that? Because at least at that stage, it's only perfection in that. It's only perfection there. There's nothing short there. So, even my own personality, which I address as the ego at the moment, the false ego, even that goes away in that state, isn't it? So, you can give up anything, but it's difficult to give up the personality. Nobody likes to give up the personality at that stage, isn't it? So, but you can see how powerful that Sushupti state is. Even if you have a highest position in this material world, still if you are told that you can't sleep, but you can have all this position or prime minister or president or whatever it is, but when it comes to a few days, you will say, I don't want prime minister's or president's position. All I want is to sleep for a few hours. Why is that? Because the soul has this nature that after a certain time, it wants to go back to its origin, from where it came from. And that is that Sushupti state where it was in association with Krishna. So, as I mentioned that time also, that for some time we may struggle not to sleep, but ultimately we'll all be forced to sleep. That is the fact, isn't it? So, there are people who have realized to Krishna and they don't sleep anymore. That's another side of it. Because what they have experienced in Sushupti, if the same thing happens in the vacant state, then they may not sleep anymore. That's another thing. But so what the sleep is showing to us, the material body, the mind, intelligence and the ego, none of them is me. None of them is me. So if it is like that, is there any necessity to be frightened about death? That is the next question, isn't it? So, once we get to know that Sushupti state properly, then one does not get frightened about death. This is the fact. If we get to know that Sushupti state properly, then the fear of death goes away. Because every night this is happening to us, that we are leaving the body, we are leaving the mind, leaving intelligence, ego, everything, and then coming back to it in the morning again. So practically, there is rejection of the body happening every night in the deep sleep. So Krishna's point is that because it is like that, why we give so importance? Only thing is it's once for all a rejection of the body. That's all the death means, and acceptance of another body. So that is why in Sushupti what they call it as asangoyam purushaha. Asangoyam. Asangoyam, asangoyam, asangoyam puna puna, sachidanandaru voham, ahameva avamavyayam. That asangoyam, asangoyam. Asangoyam means I have no sangam, I have no connection, I have no connection with this body. I have no connection with this body. So, because the person inside, he is asangam, he has no sangam. We think that the soul has a lot of connection with the body. but he has no connection with anything. He has no connection with anything. Once this theory, this principle is understood, then that is why among liberated souls, the statement is that just like coconut, when the coconut, when it gets very dry, if you shake it, it will start making noise inside, because the other part, the pulp part, it becomes so dry and gets separated from the body. And that is what is considered to be the nature of the liberated persons, liberated souls. They are just like that dry coconut which is inside the green coconut. Outside it was green, but after it got dry and dry and dry, inside part shrinks and it separates itself from the main body, isn't it? So in liberation, that is exactly what happens. The connection with the body is gone, and but still it remains inside. The soul remains inside, although it's been separated from the body, from the gross body. And that is the state what Krishna is talking about here. Asangoyam, asangoyam, asangoyam. And exactly the same state Krishna spoke in the Bhagavatam also, isn't it? Dehastobi na dehastha. It's a very important statement in the Bhagavatam. Dehastobi na dehastha. He is in the body, but he is not in the body. That is the state we need to be before leaving this body. Dehastobi na dehastha. Either through reflection of this statement from Krishna and getting fixed up, constantly analyzing our connection with our own body. How much are we connected with this body? And moving away from the body, because that's the only way Krishna says you can escape the miseries of life. There is no other way. Otherwise, you just have to accept birth, death, old age, disease, one after the other. There is no other choice there. Such an important thing, isn't it? Dehastobi na dehastha. How Krishna says, Vidwan sopnad yathotida. Just like when you wake up from the sleep, whatever experience you had in the sleep, it's gone, isn't it? Similar to that, Krishna says, it is very similar to that. When you wake up inside, then the soul one day realizes that I have nothing to do with this body, and the body is not anymore involved in the with the consciousness. Consciousness and the body is separated at that time. Actually, there is no connection with the consciousness and the body. Actually, there are certain places in the Bhagavad Gita, it amazes people the way Krishna has spoken certain things. And some of the verses in the Bhagavad Gita, you can only understand that after self-realization. That is the difficulty. Especially in the 9th chapter, there are some verses. Only after realization, self-realization, you will understand the meaning of that verse, what Krishna has said. You can keep on explaining that, but it is so difficult. It's so difficult. You will wonder about this, how subtle the whole subject is. How subtle the whole subject what Krishna has discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. That's the beauty of the Bhagavad Gita. So anyway, here, Dehastobi na dehastha, Krishna says to Uddhava. Dehastobi na dehastha. Vidwan, sopnad yadothida. As though he has woken up from a dream, suddenly one day when you wake up, you find that you have nothing to do with the body. And what happens to the other side? Adehastobi na dehastha. Adehastobi na dehastha. Other person, he has left his body, but actually he has not left the body. He wants to come back to the same body, what he has left. Kumati sopnadrikiyatha, he says. Kumati means one whose intelligence is bad, who has got a wrong idea in his head. So in those two lines, Krishna has spoken about that, about this self-realization, how it happens in a person. There are so much to know about this, because when we discuss Bhagavad Gita, we will come to each one of these different things, that how this identification has come to us with the body, and how in practical life you can see how it is taking us into difficulties, and at the same time, those who haven't got identification with the body, how it manifests in their body when they don't have identification with the body. Just like babies, if you look, when the babies wake up, they look different than us, isn't it? Have you observed that? They are not like us. They look very fresh, and they find some kind of happiness in them, you observe when they wake up. I'm sure everybody has observed that, isn't it? Babies, very small babies, 6 months old, practically up to 1 year or so, you can say. When they wake up, their whole body looks energized, and there is some kind of effulgence, or not to say effulgence, some kind of pleasure when you look at that their face, when you look at their body. And when we wake up, why is this difference, this important thing? Because they are not in the bodily concept of life yet. When they are born, they are not even using the senses. That's why what they call, the mothers say that till they start looking at things properly and getting to know the things properly, till then they will shake different colors and different balloons and all kinds of things, try to attract the attention to the color. But initially they have no color consciousness. They don't know anything about the colors. They don't know anything about the this world, and they don't even know about their own body. To such an extent they are separated from the body. It is because of that separation from the body that they look so wonderful when they wake up. That is the reason behind it. That because they are not identifying with the body, after the deep sleep when they come back, they look so fresh and so beautiful because of the separation from the body. This is the principle behind it. They look so fresh from the body. So this is the way it works. So in other words, and it is, that is the same truth for a liberated person also. For a liberated person also. The difference is, in a baby's case, it happens in a natural way. But in a liberated person, it happens consciously. Full consciousness, he is coming out of it, from the body. And that's why it is better. That is what's expected of us, Krishna is saying there. That in full consciousness, if you are able to separate yourself from this body, then you, jnanis also, if you look, some of the great jnanis, you look at their eyes, immediately you will be shocked by seeing the effulgence in their eyes. There are people like that. There were many people like that. If you look at their eyes, the sparkling eyes, why? Because there is no connection with the body anymore. The soul is already freed from its connection with the body. So just like in the case of the small babies, similarly the liberated souls also, they have no more connection with the body anymore. They have freed themselves from that. We'll discuss that later when we come to those chapters in the Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna is saying here that this important state of the Sushupti state, neither there is time, there is no space either. Another beauty of the Sushupti. There is no time, there is no space, isn't it? So there is no space, there is no time either. And that thing, what is still there in the Sushupti, which is not unaffected by time and space, that is what is called Desha Kala Avadibhyam, beyond time and space. Sandra Anandava Bodham, that Bodham, awareness. Bodhal Magamanivamidam Kala Desha Avadibhyam, Kalam and Desham. That means time and space is beyond. It's beyond time and space, that thing inside. He doesn't know time and space. For us, time and space is important in the waking state, isn't it? But in the deep sleep state, when he's in the present there, so Upanishads will talk about this in such a way that you are already in identification with that consciousness, you are already in a liberated state. But just like a mirror, it is telling us these things and asking us to look at ourselves. So, if we have the eyes, we should look at it and find it. If we don't have the eyes, then we have to leave it at that, isn't it? So, in other words, why is Upanishad saying this is, that this is not some vastu or the object what we are looking for, is not for something what you have to work hard and get it. It's already there in everyone inside. It is present there. Because, and that is where this process of mananam is meant to be done. That this understanding of Sushupti, what's happening in Sushupti state, and constantly reflecting, looking back into Sushupti, and what all changes are going on in Sushupti, and when you come back from Sushupti, what changes are happening in us, and the interference of the soul in between the Sushupti and the Jagrat state, and between two Chittavritti also, all these things requires continuous contemplation of that. So, (clears throat)
when we were into the Sushupti state, when we were in the Sushupti state, how did that experience come? This is the first question to ask, isn't it? How did I feel that great happiness, what I felt in Sushupti? Because as soon as you can notice there, my false ego, when it left me, when the false ego got dissolved, that I am thinking, I am the doer, I am the enjoyer, kartrutva bhoktrutvam, when that has left me, I felt happy actually. Is it not? And Krishna is telling us that prakriti krayamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahankara vimudhalma kartaham iti manyate. So that is a proof of that, what Krishna has spoken, isn't it? Krishna is saying, ahankara vimudhalma, ahankaram alone is the cause of your problems. Kartaham iti manyate, I am the doer. And ahankara vimudhalma, vimudha means foolish person. He has become foolish and he is the doer, he is thinking. But because we don't know about ourselves enough, we continue to think in that way. Imagine this one thing if we can keep in our mind. At least it's very logical Krishna is putting forward, that in Sushupti state, when the false ego left me, I was happy. Why should I not think the same way in the vacant state as well? Whenever false ego is overpowering inside, whenever we think we have done something, it is at that point we have to apply this thought behind, straight away it should come, and start thinking that I am taking this great pleasure from my doing something because of my false ego. False ego is enjoying at that time. But the fact remains that in the deep sleep state, I have experienced happiness in the absence of the false ego. Why should I allow that false ego to come and create an artificial happiness and distress in the vacant state? This question we have to ask ourselves. That's why all this is spoken. So that to get transferred that same state of consciousness in the deep sleep state to the vacant state, which will help a lot. So they have found out this, who? The sages. That is how they started this, working from there. They found out this, that when the false ego has dissolved, Sushupti state happened. And that is why, how they found out that perfection is in the Sushupti, not in the vacant state. Out of the three states, the perfectional state is in the Sushupti, in the deep sleep, not in the vacant state. So, in other words, in vacant state also, to acquire the same state of the Sushupti happiness, we have to get rid of the false ego from inside. There is no other choice. And if we do that, what we have experienced in Sushupti, you can experience in the vacant state, but with full consciousness. With full consciousness, you can experience in the vacant state, if the false ego has left us. When we say false ego, it's not that everybody has false ego. It's not anyone who thinks I am the doer, I am the enjoyer has got the false ego, which means practically 100% have the false ego. Only the liberated souls will be free from that. So Sushupti is like that, but we don't know that Anandam, what was inside the Sushupti, we are unable to report it back, what it was. We don't know what it is, but we know it was there. We don't know what it is, isn't it? So when we wake up suddenly, only you have a recollection of that. Because at that time there was no personality or individuality or intelligence. So in the vacant state we have the mind and intelligence, isn't it? So that happiness is Krishna. That's how you have to understand that. That happiness in that deep sleep is Krishna. That means that was the time when we had the contact with Krishna. All this is what is written in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam. It's not stories. It is reality of life. Only thing, due to our bad education and bad treatment, we have developed some false understanding of this world. That's what we are suffering from now. And we are struggling now to understand the truth. And Krishna is telling us something and we start thinking, oh, is this going to all be true? As though I am completely in a truthful state at the moment. So much in ignorance, when Krishna says to us, that take it like this, he says, that Sushupti state, what you have experienced there, that's me. That's Krishna. What you have experienced in the Sushupti state is Krishna. So that Sushupta Brahmam, Saushupta Brahmam, that Satta, that is what the word they use there. Satta Matram Nirvishesham Hiriham. Bhagavadam says like that, isn't it? In Bhagavadam, they brought all these things through Vasudeva and Devaki and Srinarada Maharshi and all. They are talking about this because if you say with the background of prison and the background of Krishna being carried away from the Vrindavanam to Gokulam and all that, it becomes a little bit more interesting to hear, isn't it? So it's all spoken. But the message should never be forgotten. Message is this, that Satta, the essence inside Krishna, that is what we are missing in the vacant state. So in other words, if you have to experience Krishna in the vacant state, like in the deep sleep state, false ego must go. That is the conclusion from that. When we lost the false ego in the Sushupti state, in the deep sleep state, how we felt happiness, freedom from the body, freedom from the mind, freedom from the intelligence, freedom from the ego, freedom from the personality, freedom from all other designations, and we were happy there. From this, the conclusion, the Upanishads are saying, the sages are telling us, if you want that realization in the vacant state, you have to lose all these things first. Body you have to lose, mind you have to lose, intelligence has to go, ego has to go, personality has to go. And people are preaching Bhagavad Gita for personality development. What do you think? This is the type of situation what we are in today. Using this same Bhagavad Gita, they are telling people how to develop your personality. This is what they have understood from Bhagavad Gita. So we have to be careful when we speak Krishna consciousness. It has to be based on what Krishna has spoken, nothing else. There's a whole whole reality behind all these things in the Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna has spoken. There are certain verses in the Bhagavad Gita, it really opens one's eyes when you start reading through them. You will see them in the many different places. So powerful they are, and so make so much, so subtle level, it opens up our eyes. Mayatadamidam sarvam jagadavyakta murtina mastani sarvabhudhani nachaham tesho vastida. In the 9th chapter you will see a verse. Mayatadamidam sarvam. Krishna says, I am everywhere. Everything is in me. Then the next thing he says, I am not anywhere, he says. If you read all that verses, you start wondering, what does it all mean? Mayatadamidam sarvam jagad avyakta murtina matstani sarvabhutani na chaham teshu avastida. I am in everyone, but nobody is in me. Like these statements like that. So many places you will see similar ones in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? So similarly, also about karmam, Krishna talks about in the same way, isn't it? Action in inaction. What does that mean, action in inaction? So all these things are the secrets of Bhagavad Gita, the very, very secrets of Bhagavad Gita. And that's what makes Bhagavad Gita scripture or shastram, which is going to the very subtle side of our life in this world. So here, so Krishna's point is, if you have lost your personality, vyaktitvam, or individuality, then who is dying then? Who is dying then if that's gone? So who has got birth, who has got death, who has got the fear of illness, and who has got the fear of death, and who has got problems in life? So will the body still continue to act? Body's activity in Shastram, they call it as cheshta. You know why it is called cheshta? There is a reason behind it. Every word in the Bhagavad Gita is so beautiful that it's all linked to something. Cheshta means body is acting, isn't it? When something is acting and it is remotely controlled by something else, it's called a cheshta. We are thinking we are acting according to our decision. We made the decision. I'm doing this. No, it's not. Prarabdham is behind the body. Prarabdham. The prarabdha means the karmam that we have done in previous lifetimes, which has now fructified and which has created this body, and which keeps this body going in this way. And you can see this. Till that prarabdham is over, the body won't go. it will stay. Some people, it's amazing. They are so sick, but they won't die. They'll continue to live in this world. Why? Prarabdham is not over. What can you do? And some other person, very hale and healthy, lived for a few years in this world, suddenly he has to go from here. Why? Prarabdham is over. That prarabdham, in that particular body he was meant to experience, is finished. So he has to go. He has no choice. So that remote control of prarabdham on this material body is called cheshta. Body is cheshta, it says. Cheshta. Cheshta means it does things. And we think that we are doing it, but that prarabdham is the cause behind it. Cause behind it. And body will continue to work. Why important is, body will continue to function, because if you start thinking that, oh, if my personality goes away, will the body work after that? Shastra says, yes, body will work. Body doesn't require false ego to work. We have this misconception, isn't it? Because of the false ego, I'm able to do work. I'm able to do things. No, that's not true. Bhagavad Gita's point is, body is functioning because of prarabdham, not because of your false ego. Liberated souls also eat. Liberated souls also sleep. Liberated souls also do various things in this world. Where is the difference then? They know very well prarabdham is doing everything. That is why it says in the Bhagavadam that when they are eating and sleeping, they know that it is a prarabdham that is forcing them to do it. That is the difference. They are not even thinking. That is why Arjuna asked that question, isn't it? How does he eat? How does he sleep? How does he walk? All these questions. Because normally people will have misunderstanding that if he is self-realized, all does he walk in a little different than us. All kinds of thoughts will come to our head, isn't it? We start thinking, how does he really walk? How does he sit? How does he sleep? Arjuna is asking all these questions. It is in relationship with this. That ego is gone away from inside, but still he is doing everything like everybody else. Why? Prarabdham will force him to do that. That is the important thing. Prarabdham will continue doing everything in this world, what it is meant to do. Prarabdham can run this body all through the life. It's not necessary to have the false ego to operate. So, actually, false ego only creates trouble. Never does anything good to us. So, even without that false ego, the body will do its work properly. It will do its work. You know this, there's a lot of research done on this somnambulism. People have done on the somnambulism. So they are saying, who have done the research, that they can do much more, better. They do much better, because in somnambulism they don't have the false ego operating. Sometimes they get up from the bed, go away walking somewhere, and they come back and they don't get into any problem. Because there is no false ego operating in them at that time. That doesn't mean that we also have to develop somnambulism. That's not what it meant. But just to say that how the body and the mind operates in two different planes. The ego has no role there. And there are so many stories written about that. They get up during the deep sleep. They wake up. And then they go to different places. And they walk there and they come back. And they're still sleeping. And some people, they've gone to the deep sea and has been swimming there and came back. And still he was sleeping. Such extreme cases are there in somnambulism also. So if you look in the same way, small children also, you will see, you will get frightened. Are they going to fall? Are they going to fall? We think like that. But then if you see some of them, how they escape from that, before they don't get into trouble at all. So when they know that they're going to hit somewhere, in a natural way, they move away from there. So there is something in them that is making them to operate. In other words, the important thing is there. Automatically, you can see them moving away from here and you from there. How are they able to do that? This is one of the interesting topic in the Vedanta. They are saying here that sometimes you notice this, and especially where there are a lot of monkeys in the forest and all, you will see there. The way they jump from one top branch of the tree, another top branch of the next tree. And they have no fear. They jump from this branch to the next branch, something like 100 feet high. And they have no, you never see them falling. They're able to catch the other one branch and get through from there. So where is this power coming from? Where is this coming from. And automatically, sometimes you'll see them walking on a tight rope or a line, but they'll just keep going on that, holding on to it, they'll just walk like that. And you can see there, automatically, their body is protected. Their body is protected. And so, many dangers, what we experience in our life, it doesn't happen to them. In other words, there is a force in everyone who has a responsibility to protect this body. And that force will take this body right up to the point of death, and eventually it will kill this body and it will go. And that is the force in the material nature. That powerful force in the material nature. That's what it does. We look at life in a different way, but that's another thing. That's our ignorance. But Shastram is telling us that in everyone, when somebody is taken a birth in this world, some force behind is keeping that body going till its prarabdham is finished. And after that, it will kill that body and it will go. That force will go from the nature, what it does. So, and that force which does all these things doesn't require our false ego. That force from which comes from the nature, which looks after us. I mean, you can see this. Where was the guarantee that we will be cared for in the mother's womb? And where was the guarantee that when you came out from the womb, also that mother, father will look after? There is no guarantee for anything, any of these things. But it does happen, isn't it? So from a natural point of view, it is Krishna's arrangement that is working, not our false ego is working. And this very force which is protecting us every day, because till the prarabdham is over, it is the duty of that force to make sure that this body remain here. And whatever necessary for prarabdham to experience, that force will organize things in such a way. To such an extent, everything is under its control. But we, in our ignorance, are thinking that everything I am doing, I am managing, I am running this, I am running that, that's where I am protected, I looked after myself. We also tell others, you look after yourself. We say, who can look after whom? But it is that force, it will take us all the way through life, and when the prarabdham is finished, it will kill us and it will go. It will bring some cause behind it to forcing us to leave the body and it will go. That force will leave us. This is how death happens. But we will say, oh, we got this disease or that disease, that's why he died, we say. Isn't it? For 80 or 90 years old, and he'll say, he'll die. Oh, poor man, he died out of cancer or diabetes or blood pressure or anything. That has come only then and caused him some problem at the time. That was only that force has done that, imposed that illness to get rid of the body from there at that point. Physically. When it wants to force us to lose our material body, it brings it in. That force brings that in and forces us to go out of that body. Body becomes dysfunctional, in other words. So, and that doesn't require false ego. And therefore, as we keep on contemplating on this, when we do venanam on these things, that we will understand tatvajnanam or knowledge of this soul is not going to cause any problem, because I am not this body. Body is not mine, and body is not meant for my enjoyment. Body belongs to material nature, prakriti. And where is the body? Body is also in the material nature, not in the soul. Body is actually in the material nature. And when the body has done its work in the material nature, because it's meant to do some activities in the material nature. This body is meant to do some activities in the material nature. And that's where all our activities are, in the material nature. And when we know that it has done its part and it's leaving us, and I have nothing to do with it, then who am I? That question will come at that point. Is it not? Till then we won't ask this question, who I am. But when you see that the body is a part of the material nature, and material nature has complete control over the body, not us. strictly that is the situation. Material nature has complete control over this body, isn't it? Because you can see, when we get sick, did the material nature consult us? Look, I'm going to send this illness to you. You're going to get it. No consultation at all under any situation, isn't it? So it comes. When it wants to come, it comes. And when it wants to leave, it leaves. But we misunderstand that body is under our control. Actually, material nature is in control. And material nature, when it is finished, its part, its use of this body, what it wants to do with this body, it, when it is finished, it creates a situation for the body to go. For the body to go. That is why it says here that we realize it that, and so when this question comes, who I am, at that time, when the body goes away, at that time only you start realizing that I have nothing to do with the body. So then that personality also is because of the body only, because of the body. So what is there then left? What is left there is Krishna. Krishna's part and parcel of the soul, who is Krishna, nothing, no different from Krishna. Krishna's actual identity is like that. Satyachitta Anandam, isn't it? That is Krishna. Sachidanandam is Krishna. So Sachidanandam is only left at that point. And separated from that Sachidanandam, no false ego exists in reality. No false ego exists in reality. When we know that, you will, if you are in that state of consciousness, then the body will do what is necessary in this world and you will be satisfied with that. And it will be satisfied with that. So whatever that has to be done according to the prarabdham. But inside, the fear of death has gone. Inside, the fear of death has gone. So similarly, when disease comes also, it goes. You can read through this, about this, in great personalities' life, when they were approaching death, what was happening to them? What was happening to them? When death was approaching, what was happening to them? If you read what all happened, in one case I can tell you, what happened in Ramana Maharshi's case was this, that he was having cancer and severe pain in the body. In them days, there were no medicines like today for pain control. Like we have so many things now for controlling the pain, isn't it? And practically they will give you these medicines and make you in a very deep sleep state. It will put you in through the drugs, isn't it? But those things were not available then. And he had to suffer with the pain. And there's a famous medical college, a hospital, Christian Missionaries Hospital near Chennai in Vellore, a place called Vellore. It's a famous college, medical college hospital. From there, one topmost doctor came there to see him. Somebody requested him to come. Ramana Maharshi himself didn't ask, but somebody else requested to come and see him, look at him about it. So he came, that doctor came. Forget the name of the doctor. He came and he looked at him and he said that it is a surprise to me that you are able to tolerate this situation in the body, because practically the whole thing has gone inside. Body has practically finished inside. And they were asking him that how bad is the pain? They were asking him. He says pain is something like a thousand scorpions are biting you at the same time. That kind of pain I'm experiencing, he said. Then after that, he's smiling and he's saying, you have to ask the question, who has the pain, he said. That is self-realization. After saying this, he says the body is, to such an extent, he has moved away from the body. This is such an interesting thing, isn't it? We can discuss Golokam, Vaikuntham and all later. Right now here, in this body, is it possible to realize the truth? That is the most important thing, isn't it? After what happens, I don't know what will happen after that. Whether I'll go to Vaikuntham or I'll go to Golokam or I'll go to Yama's planet, who knows? I don't have the record. That decision is taken later, after leaving the body. But right now, Vedantam is very clear about this. They have looked at all options. That is why Vedavyasa Maharshi mentions this in the Brahma Sutram. All discussion is not about Golokam, Vaikuntham or about Kailasam. All the discussion is this state, why we are here now, today, what should be done. That is the most important thing. How do we come out of this body? This is the most important question. But most of the people are just happy to say that after death, I'll go there, I'll go here. My spiritual master told me I'll be going here, I'll be going there. All this is, who knows what's going to happen after death. But today, right now, here, in this body, is there any possible to know the truth? That's more important, isn't it? So that's where it's coming from. So Ramana Maharshi said like this, he said to them that I am the body is there, thousands of scorpions when they bite them, the pain is there, he said. But who is having the pain, he's saying. And he's smiling, saying this. So such experiences in many, many people's life, if you observe the many great devotees, jnanis, if you read about them and hear about them properly, you will see at the time of death, practically, they have moved away from the body. They moved away from the body. And that is exactly what Krishna is saying, dehastho vina dehastha. That unless we escape from the body, while before this body goes away, then body will go, when the prarabdham is over, material nature will take it back. And then you don't have to come back again accepting another material body. So the fear, they will do everything, but it will not affect them. It will not affect them. Many, many people have the same problems when they left the body. There's so many instances when they left the body, how things have happened at the time of death. Even Srila Prabhupada's case also, Prabhupada was suffering. There's a question about it. Body was suffering. And people who are seeing him were thinking that he is suffering in deep distress. He was suffering. Oh, he has to pain so much. And then people will start asking the next question. Oh, so much he has chanted Hare Krishna and so much service he did and he's still having all this pain. They think that it's like a barter or something, exchange. That you've done so much service, so I should not get any pain at that. No. Body has to go through what it has to go through. What there is a difference then? Difference is the person inside, he knows he is not the body. That is the only problem. He knows that the body has to go through. I am not going through that. But that we won't know. We are outside standing and looking at him. And we are thinking, oh, he's suffering like anything. Because the whole body, arms, legs, everything becomes shrunk practically. No flesh in the body, no life in the body, no proper blood circulation, digestion, respiratory system, everything is failing one after the other. And we start thinking, oh, he's suffering so much. But practically the person is not suffering. He has already moved out of the body. He's waiting for the body to go and for him to go. And that is the situation. And that we won't know. That is why Krishna is saying like that. Dehastho vina dehastha vidvan sopna yathotida. Adehastho vina dehastha kumadi sopnudrik yatha. That verse in the Bhagavatam while speaking to Uddhava. And why is like that? Just like in the movie, if somebody gets sick, will it affect the screen? Screen won't be affected, will it? Similarly, if there is a fire in the movie, will the screen burn? Screen won't burn, isn't it? Similarly, if it rains in the movie, will the screen get wet? So same thing. Similarly, so many things will happen in the dream state. But when we wake up in the Jagrat state, there is nothing there. There is nothing there. In the dream state, so many things have happened. But when you have woken up and came to awakened state, nothing is there. Nothing is there. So, so if there are so many things that has happened to this material body and the mind, and various kinds of distresses or miseries have come, the chit shakti inside or consciousness inside stays separately unaffected by that. So this solid experience is not knowledge. It's not knowledge, it is experience. It's not to be kept here, but it has to be experienced. That the chit shakti inside, which is pure consciousness, achidanandam, satachitanandam, is unaffected by all the miseries of the mind, miseries of the body, miseries of the ego, whatever happens. So If we, through constant contemplation and analysis, if this understanding we make it as our own, that means we make it as our own realization, if that happens, then that our satta, that means that essence inside, what happens to him? It is known as pratyabhijna. Pratyabhijna is the word in the Bhagavatam used. Pratyabhijna. Pratyabhijna means this, that through your own contemplation, your own analysis, through analyzing all situations in life, you keep on realizing that what is happening, everything is happening in the body, mind, intelligence, ego, and I am separate from all of that. I am completely independent from all that. If this realization happens while living in this body, Krishna calls that as pratyabhijna. Pratyabhijna. That means that we started seeing us properly, what we are. That's where the beginning. We started seeing us properly. Up to that time, we are not seeing us properly. We are seeing all these false things. Body, mind, intelligence, everything. So, because it is pratyabhijna, why they call it pratyabhijna means, it is a kind of consciousness. Not knowing it with the mind and intelligence, but experiencing it inside. That's the most important thing. Not knowing it, just like other things we are trying to know with the mind and intelligence. Even now, when we are listening, I know the mind and intelligence is working a lot, isn't it? Through mind and intelligence, you are trying to understand this also. But don't try that. That is the Krishna's point. Vyasa Maharshi also says the same thing. Don't try to understand that with the mind and the intelligence. You won't understand that. Because you are actually trying to stay out of the mind, out of the intelligence, out of the body. So this pratyabhijna, what one experiences at that stage, freedom from the body, even to some little extent if it happens, it says here that that will be the opening up of the spiritual world, opening up of the spiritual experiences at that time. Because if it you know by the mind, if anything you touch with the mind, as soon as the mind changes, it will also change. It will go. Whereas this thing, which is on a spiritual platform, if you remember, Prabhupada explains this in a way in the while chanting Hare Krishna also, isn't it? He says, surpassing the, if you look into that album about chanting the holy name, Prabhupada mentions there that surpassing the mind, surpassing the intelligence, so you start wondering, what is this surpassing the mind, surpassing? There itself you have to ask that question, what Prabhupada was trying to say. He says the chanting of the holy name, he's saying there, that is beyond the mind, beyond the intelligence. If you have heard that album, the first one that they produced, Prabhupada mentions there about the chanting of the holy name. He says there, it happens at a particular state beyond the mind and intelligence. It's not to be brought into the level of mind and intelligence. There is another plane beyond mind and intelligence. That's the first thing we have to understand. That there is a plane, a peculiar plane beyond mind and intelligence. And it is in that plane all spiritual activities happen. All spiritual activities happen. So therefore, if it is in that plane, you cannot ask questions. Questions are coming from the mind. Chittavritti, it is called. It has no value. Because this discussion centered around the soul is all beyond mind and body. Mind and body. So if you try to understand with the mind, when the mind changes, you will lose it. If you try to understand with the intelligence, if anything happens to your intelligence, it will go. It's finished with that. It's over. Because it can happen with intelligence. When you get older, your intelligence will also go, isn't it? That's when the young people start questioning you, your authority. You say, you're so dull, you're so daft, you're this, you're that, they tell us at that time. That's because our intelligence has become like that. What can be done? It's not as sharp as before it used to be. So the young people will ask, oh, they start thinking they are intelligent, not knowing that one day that's the same fate that's waiting for them to come. But that doesn't work at that time. So similarly, here, it will go like that. If it's anything connected with the intelligence, then it will go. If it's anything connected with the mind, it will also go. But spiritual cannot be lost in that way. That is the point Krishna makes there. That pratyabhijna means that bodham, That's why we keep saying that word bodham or awareness. And that realized recognition of that awareness or bodham is called pratyabhijna. That's called pratyabhijna. Because it's happening in a completely different plane, not in the plane of the mind or intelligence, on a completely different plane. So, so while hearing all this from Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavadam, if you give attention, Shraddha there, Shraddha means not with the mind and intelligence. Shraddha actually means that not allowing much Chittavritti inside. In that state, if you hear, this Pratyabhijna can happen for a short period of time, even while hearing about Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavadam. Especially the important instructions in the Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavadam has the potency to create that Pratyabhijna inside. Salsangam is meant for that purpose, to create that Pratyabhijna inside. That Pratyabhijna. How to go beyond the mind and the intelligence. Beyond the mind and the intelligence. And and if we get a glimpse of that, our bodham, it will never be lost again. So there is a, what they call as absolute security. Absolute security. Because security is what we are looking for in the world outside also. Isn't it? So, so if there is no death, if there is no such thing called death, then where is the problem with the security? So, nitya vastu. You know, that's why when they define the soul, how do they define? Nityam, shuddham, buddham, mukta, swarupam. It says, nitya means eternal. Nitya buddham, fully conscious. Nitya shuddham, it's always pure. Nitya shuddham, buddham, fully conscious. And muktam, it's always liberated. Always liberated. Always, that is the state of the soul. Always it is liberated. So, without any struggle, without any, you don't have to work hard for that to happen. And unlike we say that so much sadhana I have to do to become, realize the truth, it is not like that. Spiritual field is the only field where it is not directly dependent on the work you have put in. Everywhere else it's the other way, isn't it? How much effort you have put in, accordingly you expect the result from that. But spiritual field is the only place where it's not dependent on your effort in the spiritual life. It is, in Bhakti Margam, if you say, it is Krishna's mercy comes, you get that. In Jnana Margam, it is Shraddha. That's what creates that situation at the end. So, without surrendering to any of the activities of the false ego, and without being touched by any of the ego activities, what we have got now is that consciousness, which is unaffected by any of these things. It's not touched by the ego. It's not touched by the mind, not touched by the intelligence, not touched by the body. Completely independent, it remains inside us as pure consciousness. Pure consciousness. When you hear, if you get it, you get it. But if you didn't get it, leave it. Nothing to worry about it. Nothing to worry about it. So, just like they say, 1 pound is also a part of a 1,000,000 pound. See, 1 pound is also. Similarly, when you hear, sometimes it's 1 pound, sometimes it's 1,000,000 pound. Sometimes it will click inside. That whatever being spoken, because all depends on a lot also the purity inside, what they call it as chitta shuddhi. That is why sadhana necessary. Sadhana comes there. The more sadhana you have done and the more purity has happened inside, then naturally this kind of impact will be very direct and very quick on a person. You see? That is why you can see in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Jnana Margam and Bhakti Margam. In Bhakti Margam, they talk about these 9 processes, isn't it? Bhakti is necessary for that, to get that Chitta Shuddhi inside. In Jnana Margam, it is Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. Or what they also refer to as Sadhana Chatushtayam. Sadhana Chatushtayam means the 4 qualifications of a person looking for spiritual realization. That's called Sadhana Chatushtayam. Sadhana, what are they? They are. First thing is, nitya anitya vastu vivegam. A person who has a complete realization what is permanent and what is temporary. In other words, seeing in this world that everything is temporary, he has rejected everything and moved back into the permanent thing. He's after the permanent thing. Nityam anitya vastu vivegam. that vivegam or discriminative power to differentiate between the real and the false, between the truth and the false. Then what else? Nityanitya astu vivegam. Ihamutra bhale bhoga viragam. His vairagyam is such that he has no attraction anywhere in this world for anything, not even in the higher planets. Iha amutra bhala bhoga viragam. No desire for enjoying any senses, and he is not expecting any results from his action in this world. You will see sometimes some people like that. If you observe, especially in the holy places, people live there, isn't it? So you are going from here working 24 hours a day. When you go there, you start thinking, oh, these people, they're not doing anything. And you start thinking that what are they doing? Whole life they are just wandering around, not doing. That's because they are looking at us and thinking the poor man is working 24 hours a day. The other side of it. Isn't it? So ihamutra bhale bhoga viragam is that. That vairagyam has come, then you have lost interest in this world and the activities of this world. Completely realized it, it's all useless in one way at the end. It's all taking my time away and before knowing me, knowing the truth. So ihamutra bhala bhoga viragam. Viragam, vairagyam from bhalam, from the results of our activities, and for some sense enjoyment. From both sides, vairagyam has come. Extreme vairagyam has come to him. And that is necessary for jnanam to get deeply rooted inside. Otherwise, jnanam won't stay. Vairagyam is the pillar on which jnanam is tied. If vairagyam is not there, jnanam won't stay. Jnanam will go. It cannot stay without vairagyam. So, ihamutra bhale bhoga viragam. Then talks about shamam damam shal sambati. Shamam damam titiksha uparadi shraddha samadhanam. Six things. Control of the mind, control of the senses, extreme tolerance to everything what goes on in this world, titiksha uparadi. Parati means that able to hold on to that without any break continuously. Shraddha is not difficult to understand. What is Shraddha? Shraddha is also very difficult to explain it properly. You talk about Shraddha all the time, isn't it? There is no Shraddha, we say. Why do we say there is no Shraddha? Sa tidiksha Shraddha. When a person has absolute faith in the Shastram and the words of the spiritual preceptor, Acharya, then he has got Shraddha. He has got Shraddha. Otherwise, he has no Shraddha. He has to have that strong faith. What Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavadam, is perfect. And he has to accept that without... He should have no doubt about anything that is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavadam. To that state, he should be so firm in his Shraddha. So, Shraddha is important. So, Shamam, Damam, Tidiksha, Uparadi, Shraddha, Samadhanam. Samadhanam means after going through all these things, he has reached the state where he is so peaceful with himself, with the whole situation, that he can be live without any chittavritti and can execute this. All these are qualifications for Jnana Margam. Plus, added to all these three, which one? Nityanitya Vastu Vivekam, Ihamutra Bhala Voga Viragam, Shamadamadi Shal Sambati, and the last one, more important than anything else, is intense desire to free oneself from this body, Mumukshatvam, liberation. Or mokshatam, desire for liberation. When all these things are there, he is qualified for Jnana Margam. In Bhakti Margam, we say, what is the Bhakti's key? Sharanagati, surrender. There is nothing else beyond than that. In Bhakti, you don't need to be concerned too much about the Jnanam, but surrender is necessary. Surrender is the key to Bhakti. That is why in Ramanuja Sampradayam, they don't call it as Bhakti. They call it as Sharanagati. That is how they see Bhakti. They don't call it as bhakti, like we discuss about bhakti. They don't say it as bhakti. They call it as sharanagati. Sharanagati is the thing. There's nothing higher than that, sharanagati. Surrendering completely to Krishna. And whatever Krishna puts you in, whatever situation he puts you in, puts you through, tolerating that and taking complete Krishna shelter. So, in each satsangam, when you keep on hearing this, that inside something is breaking up between the connection with the body and the soul. Constant hearing, it has to have its effect also one day, isn't it? It cannot go on, it is not going to change the other opposite way. that if you hear about Krishna in this way, whatever we are discussing here on Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, the chances of you becoming a hardcore materialist is very little. It cannot happen after that, because inside already you started experiencing in different levels that all this is at the end, this body is causing me only problems, mind is causing me problem, intelligence is causing me problem, ego is causing me problem. So naturally the attachment to all this will start breaking up in a very subtle level inside. And that is the way satsangam work, that you start feeling that the separation becomes a reality. So it's the same thing that, you remember we talked about this, Anganam, Anganam, Andare, Madhavam, 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 Chandare, Angana. In the Krishna Karnamritam, that verse comes. Between two gopis and Krishna, and between two Krishna and a gopi. That is nothing but, gopis are considered to be the Chittavritti, that coming, and Krishna comes in between every two thoughts. Every two thoughts he appears here. So, Sadvrittiye, in the Ahandana Saraswati Bhagavatam, he mentions this, Sadvrittihe Gopika. All the vritti inside is Gopi inside. Sakshi Krishna Swarupam. And the witness in between is Krishna. It is Krishna. Avadmi Galahadhe Rasa Anup. And so all these vritti means the thoughts inside. In between two thoughts, what is that which shines in between? Krishna Swarupam. It is Krishna's presence between the two thoughts. You may wonder why we are discussing about all these things to such an extent. The reason is this. Normally, a less intelligent person, he will discuss about the whole creation, or what's going in America, what's going in Australia, what's going in Europe, Africa, India, whatever it is. That is the dull nature of a person. He will be discussing those things very carefully, very seriously. In other words, politics and the developments all around. Little bit more intelligent person, little bit more intelligent, he will first see what is the situation where he is living, what's going on around him in his own house. Things are peaceful so that he can have a peaceful life here. That's a little better intelligence. Higher than that is when one is inquiring what is happening within himself. So the more we go closer to inquire about yourself, you are actually doing the most intelligent thing to do. So just like between two thoughts, because it's on a much subtle level now, that like Krishna spoke about in the Bhagavatam also, Sri Narada Maharshi said this to Yudhishthira Maharaj. Also between, take note of that thing which comes between the two thoughts. What is that is coming here. So similarly, between the two thoughts, between the gopis, Krishna is appearing. Similar way, between the two thought waves, that's Krishna who is interrupting there. So that experience between the two thoughts, Krishna's coming in and departing, which we don't take notice of, that is called rasam. Rasa anup, it says. Vandana Saraswati explains that is rasam. That is Krishna who is in between the two thoughts. That is rasam. Rasa anabhuti. Similarly, while in satsangam also, even for a very split second, if this experience comes, you have to understand that when that experience comes, it's not coming from the mind. You have to notice all these things. In a very subtle level, you are studying yourself. That just like between two thought waves, when Krishna comes, we won't take notice of it. We only know the last thought, but as soon as the new thought has come, the last thought is gone. Then you don't remember. Then you have to keep a diary or in your BlackBerry to remind you to bring the thought back again. So dull we are, we won't even know what's going on. But we are very concerned only about the thought. We got so used to thinking about the thoughts rather than what happened between the thoughts. That's the problem. So that's why one thought has come, and then the next thing we think about is the next thought. What happened between the thoughts, that has not caught our attention any time. It never caught our attention any time. So, but in Salsangam, when you are continuously hearing Krishna's Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavadam, at some point in time, suddenly you get an experience of that realization of Krishna's instructions. To a very small level, it may happen inside. Krishna is saying that is not coming from the mind. Rather, it's coming from the soul. That is Krishna's presence at that time inside. That's why it is Salsangam. Otherwise, it is some other Sangam, you can call it, whatever you like it. So, because, how does he know about that? So, we get it, but we lose it after a while. Because, how does that happen? In the Yoga Vasishtam, there is a state, there is a story about that. Chindamani Ubhakyanam, it is called. Chindamani Ubhakyanam. Chindamani, when you heard about it, about Krishna's very interesting statements in the Bhagavatam, isn't it? Just for example, I'll tell you some of them. Dehastho vina dehastha. It's an amazing experience it is in life. Is it not? If we get it. If we get it. That while living in the body, not being controlled by the body. What a fortunate situation that is. Now, when you hear about that, because only Krishna has spoken about that, when you hear about that, at least some thoughts will come. How nice it is to be that state, in that state. Isn't it? And for a very, very short period of time, if that experience has spread into your own consciousness and started thinking that in that state, what will it be like that? Because normally, we are dragging this body everywhere. Isn't it? That is the normal experience. It's giving enough trouble, but you're unable to do anything about it. So you drag it everywhere. You cover it up so nicely and show it to the world, everything is fine inside. But you know the reality. Suppose the skin is not there, there will be all the birds will be biting here now to get the stuff what it wants from us. The blood, the mucus, the meat. The birds will come. Only because the skin is there, it's covered, it's not touching. So you know what it is actually means, isn't it? This body is nothing but a bag of all this unwanted rubbish inside. And in the middle of that, Krishna is there, sitting there. In the middle of all these unwanted substances, right? So, Yoga Vasishtam says like this, in Chindamani Bhakyanam, what it says is like this, that you will hear all these things, and then you start thinking about yourself, that if the body is so rubbish, so garbage, or such a mixture of all the stool, urine, and flesh, and blood and mucus and everything, not one of them you would like to keep it. You want to discard everything, isn't it? And in the middle of that, such a nice experience is happening that you start thinking, I have nothing to do with it, I'm separated from all these things. And if that thought happens, but when you leave the room and go away, the whole thing is gone. Whole thing is gone. So, this is not a substance which is to be understood by the mind. That is the point. That this is not something which you have to understand with the mind or with the intelligence. If you have got it otherwise, take advantage of it. If you haven't got it, don't worry about it. When we say all these things, what I'm saying is, it is not with the idea that your mind should understand or intelligence should understand. That's not the purpose. Purpose is, in that spiritual plane, if your consciousness is accepting it, that and able to move away from the body, even for a short period of time, while hearing about it, that experience, it may not last long. When you go out, it will go straight away. That is because in Chindamani Bhakyanam, it mentions there that what you get, you have to value it also. You have to give importance to it. If you don't give importance to it, if you, like everything else, we try to understand things on an intellectual plane. That's what the biggest mistake we make on spiritual life. It's not for intellectually pursuing, for intellectual understanding. It is for experiencing it. So that experience, what you got, you have to see how to protect that experience, what you get from Salsangam. Whatever you get, that experience, how to protect that also, you have to learn that. And whatever that is necessary to protect that, you have to do it. Otherwise, it won't stay. Because you can see sometimes a lot of happiness you get from Shastram when you study, when you hear. It is true, everybody gets it. And when you get that happiness, if you don't know how to protect that happiness, then it will be lost. It will be lost. So you yourself has to look at it and see what is actually taking away that happiness from me. When I heard what I got, that happiness, why I'm not able to sustain that inside. No, understand that. Purely because when we go away and we associate with the modes of nature, they will have its very powerful impact on us, and that's where only problem comes. So if it is, if there is Shraddha and or if there is Sharanagati, Krishna who is inside us, Antaryami, he will open it up all the time and help us to keep that lamp burning inside. Keep that lamp burning inside. So the more we value it, Krishna will give you also the support from inside. But you have to know this, that thing, the lamp that you got inside, or the light what is inside, it has to burn inside, and it has to be kept burning from inside, not from purely from outside. It's from inside that thing has to happen. So, and that is not done with the mind or with the intelligence. So that why I'm saying this is before we enter into Bhakti Yoga, because Bhakti is nothing to do with mind and intelligence. Bhakti is nothing. And we were trying to study Bhakti through course and seminar, and where we will get at the end. What will be our Bhakti at the end? When we can tell somebody else that same Bhakti, what I've studied. That's all it's worth. So just like once there was a music school. So in the music school, a lot of people enrolled because they had nothing else to do. They couldn't get anywhere else, so they said, we'll go and study music. So they went and joined the music school. So the person who was teaching there, he was a good musician. He had a lot of interest in the classical music. And he likes when he gets good students to teach them, who have got the talent for that. If you have no talent for music and no interest in the music, you go and enroll for music, study music. What will happen? What happened was, he started teaching the music, and after a while he realized that this lot is not worthwhile teaching anything. So he told them one day that, why am I teaching you? I don't know, he said. But all I can tell you one thing, he said, after going through this course of this musical course, whatever that is, you don't go and perform any concert anywhere, but only you can teach somebody else what you have learned. That's all it's worth. Because music is not something for teaching alone, it's also meant for enjoyment, isn't it? Those who are very absorbed in the higher levels of music, they know music is for enjoyment. And actual music is only meant for glorifying Krishna. That is proper music, as we know from the Gopis created Hindustani music and other musical, Puradradas and so many others. They have created music for only for that purpose, Tyagaraj and so many others like that. So this process of hearing and experiencing self-realization through the process of knowledge, through the process of surrender, it says here that there is no writing, reading, making notes, and all that. It doesn't exist there. That's why he says here, Naham Veder Natapasa Nanane Nanachejaya. You remember that words at the end of the 11th chapter? Naham Veder Natapasa Nadane Nanachejaya Shakya Evam Vido Drishtam Drishtavanasimam Yatha. That is the introduction to this next chapter. Naham Veder Natapasa Nadane Nanachejaya Shakya evam vidho drishtam drishtavanasimam yatham. And then Krishna is mentioning there, Bhaktya tun anyaya shaktya ahamevam vidho arjuna nyadam drishtam jadatvena praveshtam japarandapa. There, that ananyata word Krishna has used there, isn't it? Bhaktya tun anyaya shaktya ahamevam vidho arjuna. That if you want to understand Krishna in that proper way, Krishna says there should be ananya bhakti. Ananya bhakti. Ananya bhakti means this, that where you don't see that that you are separated from Krishna for a moment in any situation. In any situation. That's why I say, Naham Vedarna Dabasa Nadani Nana Chejaya Shakeva Vidodrashtam Drashtavanasimam Yatha Bhaktyatunanyaya Shaktya Aham Evam Vidho Arjuna Nyadam Drashtanja Dattena Praveshtanja Parantavam. Now, that word requires explanation. Which one? This Ananya Bhakti. In the Narada Bhakti Sutram, we saw one particular sutram which mentioned like this. What is this Ananya means? Anyashrayanam Ananyaha. You will see one sutram in the middle of Anyashrayanam Tyagaha Ananyaha. That is how it is mentioned. Anyashrayanam Tyagaha Ananyaha. What does that mean? Anyashrayanam, that means Ananyata, Ananyatvam is not something you have to acquire. You have to acquire. Anyashrayanam Tyagaha Ananyaha. In other words, the moment you start giving up the shelter, stop giving up the shelter of other things in this world except Krishna. That means all the time your shelter is only in Krishna. At the moment, our shelter, where all is it? In the job, in the bank balance, in the family, in the social life. Our shelter is all these places. Relations, friends, this, that and the other. And in a certain level, we have taken shelter of all these things, isn't it? Sri Narada Maharshi is saying, Ananyatvam means Anyashrayanam Tyagaha. Never taking any more shelter in any of them. Ananyaha. Anyashrayanam Tyagaha Ananyaha. Ananyatvam means giving up the shelter of everything else and completely in Krishna's shelter. That is Ananyatvam. In other words, totally surrendered person. That is Ananyatvam. Totally surrendered to Krishna. Except Krishna, there is nothing else in this world. To come to that realization, it's not easy. It's not easy. Great, great devotees, they have struggled. Gajendra had to go through. Draupadi had to go through. Uttaradevi had to go through. Ambarish had to go through. All of them had to. Mahabali had to go through. Every personality in the Bhagavadam to come to this Ananya. Vritrasura had to go through. Isn't it? Who else didn't have to go through? Everybody had to go through. So, Anyashrayanam Tyagaha Ananyaha. That is that Ananya Bhakti Krishna is talking about here. Bhaktya tunanyaya shaktya aham evam vidho arjuna yadam drashtamja tatvena praveshtamja parandavam. He says, isn't it? So that is that Ananya Bhakti is talking about. So all other things except Krishna, if you leave your dependence on that, if you leave your dependence on that, or shelter from that, material world, my own material body, mind, intelligence, that's all our shelter at the moment, isn't it? We leave the shelter of all these things, including the mind, intelligence and everything. We lose their shelter. If you leave all these things, what is left behind, that is that vastu, ananya vastu. Ananya vastu. That nanyam pashyati, na anyam pashyati. That's Upanishad definition about. Na anyam pashyati, idaram idaram pashyati. Na anyam jigradi. In other words, nothing you can see after that, separately anything. All you are seeing is the soul. All you are seeing is the soul. Na anyam pashyati. Idaram idaram pashyati. And na anyam pashyati means, you are not seeing anything separately except Krishna. Not only that, na anyam anyam pashyati. Idaram idaram pashyati. Separately you are not seeing anymore on the level of the body. Anymore on the level of the body. So, that state is called bhakti. That state is called bhakti. Bhakti means where there is no vibhakti. Vibhakti means separated things. Separated things is vibhakti. When you remove the separation, it is bhakti. Today we are seeing everything separate. Everybody is separate, isn't it? Due to ignorance inside, everything is separate. When realization comes, vibhakti goes away and bhakti comes. Vibhakti means all separated. I am man, I am woman, somebody is man, somebody is woman, boy, girl. And similarly, rich man, poor man, king and the pauper, and engineer and doctor, and all these kinds of separation, all based on the body. That vibhakti goes away, then bhakti comes. Vibhakti is that one separates us, bhakti is the one that unifies us, brings us to a proper consciousness. That is called bhakti. Krishna's definition of bhakti is so different than the what we think about bhakti, isn't it? So that is why only in that state of bhakti you will see the first class devotee's definition. In the Bhagavatam, first class devotee's qualification is mentioned, isn't it? Talks about three kinds of devotees. Uttama bhakti, madhyama bhakti, pragal. Ishareshu tadani, isheshu, balisheshu dushal svicha, prayamam maitri kriva obeksha, yal karodhi samadhyama. And what is the best devotee? Sarva bhudeshu ya pashel, bhagavad bhavamal, mana, bhudani bhagavad tyesha savai bhagavadottama. First class devotee. His bhakti is this state. Sarvabhudeshu yapashel bhagavad bhavam almana. Only bhagavad bhavam in all living entities. Cannot see anymore anyone as separated from that. Bhagavad bhavam in everything. Everyone is Krishna's presence in that. Krishna is there. That's all what he is seeing in us. A first class devotee seeing in everybody only Krishna's presence. Not he doesn't see the external body, color or the gender, or the language, or the nationality, or all those things he doesn't see anymore. Sarvabhudeshu yapashel bhagavad bhavam almana. Bhudani bhagavatyesha savai bhagavadottama. He is the first class devotee. And that's the same thing here. Vibhakti goes away and bhakti comes here. So what is vibhakti means? I am this, I am that. Ahankriti. So that ahambhavam or ahankriti. Ahambhavam, when it goes away from inside, and that is what is known as samadhi state in the jnana margam or nirvikalpa samadhi. Nirvikalpa means there is two things now. From the Patanjali's Yoga Sutram, when they discuss, they call it as nirvikalpa samadhi. In jnana margam, they call it as nirvikalpa bodham. That is how it is addressed in the jnana margam. So Vedavyasa Maharshi's Vedantam says nirvikalpa bodham. Patanjali Maharshi's Yoga Sutram says nirvikalpa samadhi. That's all the difference is. Where there is no vikalpam. Freedom from vikalpam. Vikalpam means this chittavritti is coming. One after the other. So, Krishna is saying here that once you have that nirvikalpa bodham or nirvikalpa samadhi state, whatever the yogis call it as nirvikalpa samadhi, jnanis call it as nirvikalpa bodham, once you touch that through bhakti, Yadam drashtam ja tattvena praveshtam ja parandava. Only through bhakti one will come to that stage. That means first vibhakti has gone, bhakti has come in. When bhakti has come in, he is in that state. Sarvabhudeshu yapashyel bhagavad bhavam almana. Bhudhani bhagavatyesha savai bhagavadottama. That pure devotee state. Pure devotee's consciousness. It is in that state, Krishna says here, that yadam drashtam cha tattvena praveshtam cha parantava. You have understood, you have yadam, you have known, you have drashtam, you have seen, and now you can enter into that oneness of Krishna. Praveshtam cha parantava. You can enter into that state of consciousness. So that is why tattvena means that you have become that. You are not anymore separated from that. So you cannot stay separately anymore. Without staying separately, tattvena, Krishna says. Tattvena means, one meaning is tattvikam. Tattvikam means based on this tattvam. Another meaning is that he has become that and entered into it. Because that verse is pretty complex verse, that is. If you read that verse, you will start thinking, what does it mean? You can explain that in one level, in a simple level, if you say, you can say like this, jnadam drashtanja tattvena, you have realized and you have gone back home back to Godhead. That's one way of saying that. Drashtanjatvena praveshtanja parandava means you have gone back to Krishna. Praveshtanja parandava. That isn't from the bhakti point of view. That is how you will see Prabhupada has explained that also in the same way. That you have gone back to Yadam drashtanjatvena praveshtanja parandava. That what does that the word say is there? That the my dear Arjuna, only by undivided and devotional service can I be understood as I am standing before you and can thus be seen directly. Only in this way you can enter into the mysteries of my understanding. That's the translation. But if you read through the purport, Prabhupada mentions that how you will go, you can go back to Krishna in that way from a devotee's angle. From a devotee's angle, that is how it is to be understood. That it will mention there that the personal form of Krishna, two-handed form, and the four-handed, completely different from the temporary universal form. And in the Vedic literature stated that he also mentions there that Krishna is the Bhagavan Swam, there is nothing elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, aham adarhi devanam, all that. So practically, yadam drashtanja tatvena praveshtanja parantava, praveshtamja enter into parantava, O mighty armed one, Arjuna, Krishna says like that, isn't it? You can enter into the mysteries of my understanding. How will you explain that? This is all the mystery about it. This is the mystery. There is no other mystery. Mystery is this, that through bhakti, vibhakti has gone, bhakti has come. The result of bhakti is sarvabhudeshu yapashel bhagavabhavam alpana. Realization has changed. No more under the clutches of the body or the mind. Completely freed from the body and the mind. And that relationship is this, that praveshtinja parantava. That means mystery, praveshtinja parantava. Yadam drashtam cha tatvena praveshtinja. Tatvena praveshtam. Tatvena means that with this realization that bhaktyato nanyoya shaktya. With ananya bhakti, what you have reached that stage is tatvena praveshtinja parantava. You reach that stage of enter into Krishna means this consciousness completely freed from the influence of the body and the mind and all false ego inside, completely exhausted from inside, and pure consciousness seeing Krishna's presence inside as Krishna. That is that entering into Krishna. Entering into Krishna. So, here, after saying this, after saying all these things, before entering to the Bhakti Yoga process, Krishna said, what is the way, how to reach that state of bhakti? So, in other words, do not have to endeavor very hard for that, he says. In other words, didn't talk much about sadhana here. If you notice, he didn't talk about sadhana very much here. There is no special sadhana also, he has not mentioned anything. A special sadhana for developing that bhakti. So, in the normal process, when we say normal process, in the process of the Bhakti Yogam, what we discussed through Prahlada and others, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnur Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atma Nivedanam, the nine processes. The very much Krishna mentioned before that Yajnanam Japayajnasmi, chanting the holy name, isn't it? As a process for, as the greatest yajna or sacrifice. So, so suppose you are going to start chanting the holy name. It may develop in this way, that before I started chanting the holy name, I was not a devotee. When I started chanting the holy name, I become a devotee. This concept will come. This will easily come in our mind. Before chanting the holy name, I was, very often people will say like this, I was not a devotee before. But now I have become a devotee because I have started chanting the holy name. And if I stop chanting, I am not a devotee anymore. Bhakti has gone then, isn't it? In other words, bhakti and chanting the holy name, we should not link these two things together. Reason is this, bhakti is in everybody. It's not that it's not there. What has happened in us is that due to the ignorance, ajnanam inside, that realization inside is covered for everybody. It's not different for anyone. The deeper the ignorance is, the deeper will be in Maya. But it is not that you chanted the holy name and suddenly you became a devotee from that day. Even before that, the devotion or bhakti is inside there. Only thing is you didn't allow that to come out. Through the process of chanting the holy name and various other sadhana, what is happening is all that is covering our bhakti inside is getting removed from inside. Ajnanam is going away from inside and the knowledge of the soul, which is pure, is start coming out in its original nature. That is what is happening. So, so if we start giving, chanting the holy name, that although we have been instructed to chant a certain number of rounds every day, proper bhakti state is in 24 hours to be situated in that state. That is bhakti. 24 hours absorbed in Krishna, that is what is bhakti. Because such devotees, they haven't got anything else to do. Krishna is slowly taking us to a proper understanding of bhakti. In the Bhagavad Gita, you will notice this. We have made it more like a, in an organized way. We organized our bhakti. That's what the problem is. When you start organizing bhakti, there is trouble. Bhakti is not for organizing or management. Bhakti has to happen inside. It's already there in everyone. It's already there. So, that is why, if you look into that verse in the Bhagavatam, which says, Bhagavata Dharmam, what does it say? Kayena vacha manasendriyerva buddhyalpanava prakrite svabhaval karodi yadyat sagalam parasmai narayana yedi samarpayami. It's a famous verse, isn't it? There it's not saying you chant so many rounds then you become a bhakti. No. Chanting is given like this to start with somewhere. But what is expected in the proper bhakti level is that to chant all the time. No time separation from Krishna for a moment. To such an extent chanting has to happen. That is how Bhagavata Dharmam is defined. That and what else is there? That's another interesting thing. Karomi. What does that mean? If you take that me away, you are perfect. In English, me and Sanskrit me is not different. Karomi yad yad sagalam parasmai. If you take that me away, I am the doer, that me must go from there. Then it is perfect. Karomi yad yad sagalam parasmai. Narayana. Only then, if me only goes away, you can offer it to Krishna, isn't it? Narayana yadi samarpayami. Otherwise, how will you offer it to Krishna if you think that I am doing everything? Then what can you offer to Krishna? But, so that understanding that when Krishna is a doer and Krishna is giving the results, whatever Krishna wants to do, everything is happening through you and it's happening and Krishna is saying, Kayena vaja manasendriyerva. Mind, body, intelligence, senses, everything. Buddhyalpanava prakrite svabhavat. Prakrite svabhavat means according to your vasana, whatever karma is coming through this body, when everything is offered to Krishna without me, karomi yadyat sagalam, that karomi, me has to go, yadyat sagalam varasmai, when it's all, that means total surrender to Krishna. And that is, that state is called bhakti. Only that state is called bhakti. Otherwise, if we start, okay, in the normal vyavaharam, in this world, we can say, oh, he is a devotee because he is chanting the holy name. In that sense. But when you come to the state of Srimad Bhagavatam, we have to realize it in this way, that you are only a devotee when vibhakti has gone from inside completely and bhakti has walked in. Then you are a bhakta. Otherwise not. Otherwise we are a bhakta for a couple of hours in a day or for a few days in a year. Janmashtami, Ram Navami, Narasimha Chaturdashi, or Gaur Purnima, a few days we are devotee. After that we don't know what we are. So it will come like that. But in bhakti, there is no separation. All the time, 24 hours, bhakti. That is bhakti. Only then, that is why Krishna says, Satadam girtayam domam yadandaschadradavrada namasyandaschamam bhaktiya nitya yukta upasade. Another verse in the Bhagavad Gita. All the time, except Krishna, nothing else exists. That is bhakti. Only then it is Sharanagati. Only then it is surrender. Now you can see the difficulty with bhakti. Whether it is Jnana Margam or Bhakti Margam, all requires dedication, commitment. It's not going to happen otherwise. It's not going to happen. We have to see that serious and take it very, very seriously. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. So, Bhagavad Gita is only telling us, properly telling us what is bhakti means. Bhakti means vibhakti has to go from inside. At the moment, everything is vibhakti inside, isn't it? My family, my husband, my wife, my children, my society, my country, my this, my that. How will this go from inside? So that vibhakti, that's all vibhakti only. Also, vibhakti goes away, bhakti comes in. Everything is Krishna. At the end, there's only Krishna there. And that understanding to come, that is what Krishna is talking about here. That so, whatever that is happening with the body, whatever chitavritti is happening inside the mind, whatever discrimination that's happening inside through the intelligence, everything offered to Krishna. Narayana yedi samarpayami. What does that mean? In other words, Narayana is doing everything. Krishna is doing everything. I'm not doing anything. Only Krishna is there. Only Krishna is there, not me. Me is not there. And this is not a statement. If you start taking it as a statement, it's wrong. Because continuously to be situated in that state is Krishna consciousness. In that Krishna consciousness. In other words, we should not say this to justify something. Sometimes what we do, we talk all our weaknesses and then we say, what can I do? Krishna is doing everything like this. I'm not doing anything. We'll say like that, isn't it? Not for that purpose. It should not be done. So only Krishna exists. That should become our experience within us. Only Krishna experience. Experience of Krishna inside us. Nothing else exists. That experience must happen. Otherwise, normally what we do when some problem comes in life, we say, well, Krishna has put me through this situation. What can I do? There you show some degree of surrender at that time. That is not the right way. That in every aspect of life, all the time, continuously, uninterruptedly, this feeling that Krishna is doing everything, all time, while eating, while sleeping, walking, doing anything in this world, all the moment, to be aware of Krishna's hands behind it. And that is what it is mentioned there. And so, even otherwise, it is only Krishna who is doing that. But ahankaram won't, false ego won't allow you to realize that. That is the problem. False ego is telling you are doing that. Even now we are complete, perfect in ourselves. But because there is mind and the body, we experience that we are incomplete. We are incomplete. So, you must have noticed this. 108 letter. Isn't it? Do you know why this 108, where is this coming from? This one 108. Sometimes people give donations, they give 108 or 1008 and all that, isn't it? It has come. Nobody asks why. Why 108, isn't it? It's not that it is important, but it's important to know it. It's good to know. Why it is this 108 business? We say, well, say, oh, there are 108 gopis on the chanting beads. That's why we are giving an 8. In one place there's 108, it says. Another place 110 million, it says. In the Bhagavatam, 110 million gopis were there. It mentions that also. So, in that 108, the letter 0 in the middle, the number, 0 is the middle, is the only complete number, isn't it? All other numbers are, you can extend it, whichever way you like it. 0 is a complete number, it's a full circle. On the one side is 1, which I am identifying with my ego, and the other side is the 8, which is representation of Maya. Maya comes through these 5 material elements, mind, intelligence and false ego. 5 plus 3, 8. 5 material elements, mind, intelligence and false ego, they are the 8 which is on the one side. The I, the ego, 1, is on the one side, and in the middle is Param Pujaniya. Have you heard that word? When we refer to very advanced, realized souls, they will say Param Pujaniya, Pujyam. That zero is a representation of his position. Pujyam means zero, isn't it? Pujyam means zero. It does not mean that he is zero. What it means, he is complete, perfect in other words. So, this 108 is nothing but a representation of this, that between the Maya and between the ego, me, completely incomplete, unaffected by either, I remain. That zero remains inside. So, from the Jnani's point of view, that is how they accept, understand that. But, so here, you will notice also another interesting thing. This 8 is also a complete number. Unlike 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 is two zeros, isn't it? One above the other. And there also there is a perfection there in the completion in that letter, in that 8 also. There is a completion there. And Maya is called, another word is Ashtatha Prakriti. Isn't it? If you look into the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions there that Bhumi Rapanalo Vayu Khammano Buddhi Revacha Ahankara Iti Yamme Bhinna Prakriti Ashtatha. Ashtatha means 8. Bhinna Prakriti Ashtatha. Ashtatha Prakriti. Krishna is another material. So Maya is perfect on her own. She knows what she is doing, and therefore she has been given this letter 8. Realized soul is also perfect because he is zero. And that's why those two letters, 0 and 8, they are perfect on their own. Perfect on their own. So, why then 0 and 8 difference? What is that? In 8, he is crooked like this, isn't it? But it's complete. Crooked. In other words, what you see in this world is with name and form. Namarubam, it is called. Namarubam. Name and form are everything. If you are freed from Namarubam, Namarubam, you know what I am saying. Namarubam means everything has a name and a form, isn't it? What is in us is Namarubam. Suppose somebody tells me about, say, Vishnu. Somebody tells me about, what will come to my mind? First name Vishnu and name Vishnu's body, form. That will come to my mind first, isn't it? So anything if you take, say for example, then Mridangam, if you say, tell me the word Mridangam, Namam is the Mridangam and Rupam is that form. That will appear in me. Inside me, that will appear. And same thing with everything else in this world. Namarupam will appear inside. So, Prapancham is Namarupam. World is nothing but Namarupam. If you ask into Namarupam Vihaya, Upanishad says, Namarupam, you have to free yourself. Wherever, if you get connected with Namam and Rupam, if you develop any attachment to any Namarupam, it will create problem later. That is why one has to be extremely cautious inside, not to develop any ragam or dvesham to any namam or rupam. Any namarupam. So that's what it is coming from there. So once this 8 breaks away, that means what? It means you escape from the prakriti. Escape from the prakriti. So, and so therefore, liberated souls, for liberated souls, they are addressed as that he is liberated from this 8. He is liberated from the 8. That means from the grip of prakriti. From the grip of prakriti. So one who has known the nature of prakriti, in other words, three modes of material nature, and that is what is this 8 representing, isn't it? Prakriti means three modes of material nature. And in those three, and when we say three modes of material nature, you have to also remember, everything in this world is under these three modes. Nothing is out of the three modes. They're all in the three. Colors are in different modes, isn't it? Similarly, all our qualities also are on different modes. Qualities in sattugunam, rajogunam, tamogunam, they exist. And matter also in different modes. Different living entities are under different modes. So there's nothing which is outside the three modes. But one who has freed oneself from the modes of nature, he is complete. So one who has known only in one dimension, he is not complete. Whereas if you know 8 and if you know 0 both, then you are perfect. That means you have known Maya and you have also known, realized the perfection, which is the 0, which is the 0. So in order to recognizing that Purnata, Krishna says that in the next verse, Mal karma krita mal paramo mal bhakta sangavarjitaha nirvaira sarvabhudeshu yasamamedi vandava. The last verse in that chapter, in the 11th chapter, you will see Mal karma krita mal paramo mal bhakta sangavarjitaha nirvaira sarvabhudeshu yasamamedi vandava. You will see a number of things Krishna says there. Mal karmaha, mal bhaktaha, mal paramaha, nirvairaha, sarvabhudeshu, sangavarjidaha. 5 things he mentions there. Mal karmaha, mal bhaktaha, mal paramaha, nirvairaha, sarvabhudeshu, and then last, sangavarjidaha. So, what are they? All these 5 things. If you look at that, you will see. Mal karmakrit means, what does mal karmakrit means? All activities, what you do with your body, or the senses, and what is happening through that body, the cheshta, as I mentioned before, the word cheshta, all that is handed over to in Krishna's, for Krishna's pleasure. Everything happens to Krishna's pleasure. Now, the same thing you will notice in the Bhagavad is spoken in a different way as dravyadvaidam, bhavadvaidam, kriyadvaidam and all, which Narada Maharshi talks to Yudhishthira, isn't it? But principle is the same, but different words are used in different places. So Malkarmaha means, Krishna is saying here, whatever happening through the senses, the body, mind, everything, offer it to Krishna. Offer it to Krishna. In other words, it is Krishna's pleasure that matters. Krishna is pleased with activities, what's happening through me, then it is Malkarmaha. Malkarmaha. So that may not happen overnight in anyone, every activity. But goal has to be kept always very clear that ultimately it is Krishna's pleasure. So malkarmaha means any activity what is happening through the body, through the senses, all the cheshta, whatever body and senses are acting in this world, let all that become a source of pleasure to Krishna. That is malkarmaha. Malparamaha means that he has taken complete shelter of Krishna in all circumstances. That is Malpara. Malpara means he is not wanting to be in the shelter of anything else. As I mentioned before, we take shelter of the family, we shall take shelter of the society, shelter of the wealth, shelter of the job, shelter of the so many things in this world, freedom from all that. But shelter only in Krishna, that is Madparamaha. Then Madbhaktaha, he says. So what does that mean? There is no more vibhakti in him anymore. So in other words, he has come to the stage, he has woken up to that state that there is nothing separated from Krishna. Nothing. That means he himself is not separated from Krishna under any circumstances without any vibhakti. What we talked about before, vibhakti. Vibhakti means at the moment everything is separate. Vibhakti, all broken up. When we goes away and bhakti comes in, then we see only Krishna. That is the pure devotee state, what is talking about. Nirvairaha sarvabhudeshu. This is another important thing. In that state, there cannot be any kind of attachment or aversion towards anyone in this world. Ragadvesham has completely gone. And finally, Krishna says, sangavarjidaha. Sangavarjidaha means that he has no sangam towards anything, either through the due to mind or due to the body or due to intelligence. In other words, even in the vyavaharam state, even in the vyavaharam in this world, there is no ragadvesham inside. There is no ragadvesham inside. Ragadvesham means if there is ragadvesham, it means spirituality is impractical. If there is ragadvesham. Spirituality is impractical. Normally that's how people say, isn't it? They'll say, oh, I've heard all these things. Finally they will ask, everything is very correct what you have said. but I have invested money in the share market. So what do you think I should do? They'll say. So, and if you ask that question, it can't be answered. It can't be answered. Or they will say, I'm going to stand for the election to become a MP or whatever it is. And if you have to stand for election, naturally you have to have ragadosham inside. Otherwise you can't blast the other party, can you? If you say, I have no ragadosham, then nobody wants you. They will ask you very clearly what is your agenda if we elect you. So that means you have to blast everything what the Tories have done or the Labour has done or the Lib Dem has done. You have to say all these things. You have to criticize them very heavily. That means you need ragadvesham at that time. So therefore, you can't link all that. That is not possible. Wherever there is, even in Vyavaharam, when ragadvesham goes away, only then these things can happen. To such an extent, purity has to happen inside. Malkarmaha, malparamaha, madmataha, nurvairaha, sarvabhudeshu, and sangavarjidaha. These five things Krishna is saying there. And so, therefore, in the advanced state, they only engage in very essential activities. Only very essential activities. So, unnecessarily not to create ragadvesham inside. Unnecessarily not to create. And if you do that, that work will never be finished. Work will never be finished. Because normally what happens is, when one engages in activities, ragadvesham begins from there, isn't it? That's where ragadvesham develops. When you have to do some work in this world, there will be ragadvesham. Why? Either the results are not favorable or unfavorable. Accordingly, ragadvesham will be there. Or the person whom you have to work with, he is causing problem, there will be ragadvesham there. So in a very subtle level, if you look at it, you can see that wherever you engage in activity, ragadvesham is bound to come in that activity. So that is where Krishna mentions here that without able to free yourself from ragadvesham, and if you cannot function that way, you should give up that activity. If an activity is coming to a state that it is unnecessarily creating ragadvesham inside, Krishna says that activity must be given up rather than going through that activity and creating ragadvesham. To such an extent, ragadvesham is a problem in us. So, in other words, you can't, every job or every work what we do, if we get attached to it, we'll start looking at the balance sheet, isn't it? Accounts, ultimately. And you can't hate anything or you can't get attached to anything. This state of consciousness. Can't hate anything. Because one who has known the truth, how can he get attached to anything? That's the question. Coming from Krishna himself. Because he knows very well nothing is permanent in this world. And he also knows everything is nothing but an appearance in this world. So he won't stick to anything. That sticking is the problem. Activity is not the problem. When any activity leads us to sticking to it, once sticking happens, then there will be ragam, which means that's indication of ragadvesham. Attachment or aversion is there. But so long as we can function in any activity without creating ragadvesham, it can go on forever. It is not going to cause any problems. That is what Krishna mentions here. So, so if we start looking every activity in this world with profit and loss, if we start looking to count, is it profitable? Only then I'll do it. Otherwise I won't do it. That means there is ragam. That approach in spiritual life is not acceptable. It's not acceptable. That is what Krishna is saying. Spirituality will become impractical for such people who are looking profit and loss in everything. In everything. So, in such a case, if he is not looking into it, when profit comes or loss comes, he or excitement comes, what will happen? His shanti he will lose. If he starts looking into the profit and loss, he will lose his shanti inside. And when he is in happy, his shanti will go. When he is in distress also, shanti will go. So therefore, without caring about it, whether the money comes or not, so I will stay in peaceful and he can see that state in a different level. Attachment doesn't help, and attachment over Sangam also is possible, not possible. And all activities what he does in that state is dharma, is dharmam. Because actually dharmam is to be understood as sneham or love. Love is dharmam. Because why we say like that is, people talk about love everywhere, isn't it? Because sneham is not actually a vigaram. It's not an emotion. It's actually a dharmam. For example, in this world you see, people have relationships each other, and they say that I love him or I hate him, I love her or hate her. All these kind of statements people make, isn't it? That is actually not the sneham or dharmam what we are referring to in the Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes, because people talk about this sneham, sneham means love, so sometimes people will show a lot of love. You can never trust them when they show a lot of love, because you'll never know when they will bite you. This is everybody has experienced that in life, isn't it? You never know when they will bite you. Because when their love comes, it'll come in abundance at one point. And you can never say what will happen. But you can never trust a person like that. But a person who has got dharmam, you can trust him. Because they are not doing it out of emotions. On the other hand, not that they like you, they are doing it for you. Because they know what is the right thing to do and they are doing that. That's the difference. Somebody who is doing something for you out of their emotions, thinking that I love him so much that I'll do all things. Tomorrow he may not love you and he won't do anything for you. He'll leave you there. So anything done that way is not dharmam. Dharmam is what you have understood that is the right thing to do, and if you have done that, or hitam as it is mentioned, then it is dharmam. Because somebody who likes something and doing it for you today, tomorrow if he doesn't like you, he won't do it for you. Isn't it? On the other hand, if he is conscious of dharmam, he will do it whether he likes you or he doesn't like you. He will do the right thing for you. What is to be done will be done. So because he likes you, he will do it. If he doesn't like you, he won't do it. He will not go in that road. Because sneham or love is actually dharmam. So just like we can see in life also, I said to you, we'll discuss Bhagavad Gita in here, and I thought in my mind, I'm not in a mood to go today. And you all come here thinking that I'm going to speak from Bhagavad Gita, and I didn't turn up. And if you ask me, why didn't you come? I say, I didn't feel like I'm coming today. That's not proper, isn't it? So, and that is not the right way. The right way is that it's a commitment, and it has to be kept under any situation. That is dharmam. Dharmam it is. So doing anything like that, because I didn't have the mood, I didn't come. That's another thing. So anyway, whatever it is, I come here, I'm saying so many things. Ishtam and anishtam, or otherwise your happiness of doing something and not doing things should not be linked with the karma. That's the point. What you do and whether you like or dislike it, it should not be linked together. That's wrong. That linking is not correct. That's the point you're making. That karmam has to be done. What has to be done has to be done. And that is dharmam it is. But it should not be dependent on the mood you are in, whether to do it or not. So, because you can see this, your liking and disliking has no connection with the karma. We are thinking that we are doing it. isn't it? We are doing it. Actually, material nature is doing everything. Prakriti is doing everything. You can't even say niyati. Niyati means destiny. Prakriti means material nature. Actually, material nature is doing everything, not even the destiny. So, of course, while walking back, the body can go. The body can go. So, it, within the framework of this time also, there is what is called as kala satta. The satta, the essence of the time. In business language, they say time is of essence. Isn't it? It has some meaning in it. It's not a, just a blank statement. Okay, in when doing commercial transactions, they will say time is of essence. When they make big contracts, they will say time is of essence. But there is an essence inside the time. In Shastram, they call it as kala satta. Kala satta means, so what, how that time carries out the work in this world, we don't know. Because under the influence of time, so many things are happening here, isn't it? So we cannot say this will happen, this will not happen. But you cannot guarantee. And all you can do, knowing well what is the right thing to do, and without taking the ownership, kartrutvam, of the work, and without any attachment and aversion, you can do what is necessary for others. And that is love. That is how love is understood in the Shastram. Love is understood in the Shastram. But you can see how this word is corrupted in the normal language, isn't it? Normal language, love means, oh, I love her, she loves me, and it lasts for a few days and it's gone. Then it becomes the bitter enemies in the world. So that is not the love what is spoken as here, is here. Here is that love, as I mentioned before, that I'll do this or that based on this understanding that without raga dvesham, knowing well what is the right thing to do, without any ownership of that, without raga dvesham, and executing the work what is done with the proper understanding, that is, and it may not do what, it may not please other, but it will be the right thing for that person. It will be the right thing for that person, hitam. That is why, that is what Krishna is saying here, mat karma. Mat karma means bhagavat karma. Bhagavat karma, only Krishna consciousness, which means no kartratvam, no bhoktratvam. No, I am the doer, not I am the enjoyer. And in that way, if it is executed, it becomes the worship, Krishna's worship. Bhakti Yogam's introduction, this is. The next chapter when we read, the 12th chapter will start. You will see bhakti, what Krishna is saying like this. Without kartrutvam, without bhoktratvam. Without ownership, I am the doer or I am the enjoyer. Without attachment and without aversion inside. And knowing very well what is the best for that person. Knowing well, you have to know that also, what is the right thing for that person, and not getting emotionally involved in that, and able to execute any karma in that way, Krishna says, that is bhakti. That is bhakti. You can't get a broader definition for bhakti than this. We will think that bhakti is doing all these aarti and pujas and that is there, that is its own position in the bhakti process. But proper bhakti Krishna is going to talk about in the next chapter is completely centered around this. Mal kalma krita mal paramo mal bhakta sangavarjidaha nirvaira sarvabhudeshu yasamamiti pandava. So there Krishna is saying here that it will become bhakti. If you do that, it will become bhakti. Which means that that in the long flow of time, you don't know what all will happen, what things can happen, things can change a lot, isn't it? So so you can only say to some limit, you can say, I will do this, I won't do this. But you cannot guarantee anything. But knowing well what is dharmam in this, in all our activities, that means to live in that framework of that dharmam. And knowing very well, without I am the doer, I am the enjoyer, work is happening through me. In other words, without creating any ragadvesham inside, and without kartrutva bhoktram inside, and doing what is the right thing for others, and in that way not looking into what likes they like it, but what is good for them. If you are able to execute the karma in that way in this world, Krishna says that is bhakti. That's bhakti. You see how bhakti has to be understood. Mal karma krita mal paramo mal bhakta sangavarjitaham. So in next in 11th canto you will see that in one instance Eganath Swami's commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, in there he says, there even sweeping the floor is bhakti. He says there. So how he mentions like this, that you have cleaned the house and you have taken out everything, all the garbage, everything, and took it into the backside of the house or wherever you put your garbage and threw it away. And while throwing that garbage outside, you chant the holy name, and with that, even that activity becomes a process of bhakti. Process of bhakti. So this is the Bhagavata Sampradaya. This is Bhagavatam. Krishna consciousness is like that. So in other words, in all activities in life, what is expected us to do is to chant the holy name. Because only then that particular activity becomes Krishna conscious activity. If you chant the holy name, it becomes a Krishna conscious activity. Otherwise, whatever we may do, the connection with Krishna is through the holy name. Connection with Krishna is through the holy name. Because Krishna mentions before, there is no restrictions, there is no rules and regulations as far as chanting the holy name is concerned. So so that is the reason that in Bhagavata Sampradayam, this is called Bhagavata Sampradayam. Which one? This activity is what we were discussing now so far. That means engaging in work in this world without ragadvesham, without kartratva bhoktratvam, and without being concerned about that person for whom you are doing that work, for his pleasure, rather doing the right thing for that person. In all these activities, it becomes Bhagavata Dharmam. It is called Bhagavata Dharmam Bhakti. But that bhakti is only perfect if we chant the holy name along with that. If we chant the holy name along with that. So that is how Bhagavata Sampradayam has come. You see, like we say now, that we can change all our material activities also into Krishna consciousness. Isn't it? But just by you chanting the holy name, you have done the work with full of ragadvesham, it has not become bhakti. You have to know the subtleties of this Bhagavata Sampradaya. Bhagavata Dharmam we call it. Isn't it? We call it Bhagavata Dharmam. That means, mal karma krita mal paramo, this verse is important. Krishna is saying there, without ragadvesham, without kartrutva bhoktratvam, knowing well what you are doing is good for others, not pleasing them, but good for them. If you do your dharmam in that way, and if you continue to execute, plus if you add chanting the holy name to that, it has become Bhagavata Dharma. But suppose you have chanted the holy name, but you have done everything with profit-oriented, with benefits from that, what I'm going to get from this, then it's not Bhagavata Dharma. It's completely something different than that. This is the reason why when we propagate Krishna consciousness, we have to be very clear in our head that we don't mislead others in the name of Bhagavata Dharmam. Bhagavata Dharmam looks very much like a mundane activity, isn't it? That we are doing everything. We are not going to Himalayas or taking sannyasam and moving away or anything. We live in our life in this world like everybody else. We don't even have to change the clothes. It's not even compulsory to do that. But this understanding is compulsory. That ragadvesham, kartrutva, bhoktrutva must go, and we have to do the things what is necessary, will do good to others, which means Krishna consciousness activity in any form. And if you add holy name to that, it has become Bhagavata Dharma. It has become Bhagavata Dharma. That is how Srimad Bhagavatam is presenting to us. Srimad Bhagavatam is presenting to us. It's not very complicated, because in doing this, it is a lot easier than many other processes of jnanam, yogam and other things. So you will see here, there is a strong influence of karma yogam in Bhagavata Dharma. You can notice that also. If you have understood Karma Yoga properly, you can see the influence of Karma Yoga there. You can also see the influence of Bhakti Yoga there. Bhakti also there. So, Bhagavata Dharma is nothing but a mixture of these two, Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. In a very nice way, it's blended together. It's blended together. So, actually, the people who created Bhagavata Dharma are jnanis. They are the people who created this. All of them were jnanis, weren't they? The great sages. They were all jnanis. They created that. They know very well that Krishna is not something to be acquired from outside. Similarly, very intense yogic exercises, all these things, they know it's not possible. What can the ordinary people do? So, therefore, they will normally say like this, if you go to them, that if you're finding it difficult in spiritual life, doing many serious sadhana or anything, they'll tell you, chant the holy name. They'll just tell you to chant the holy name. So, you'll feel happy that there is such an easy process to do the chanting the holy name. So, because as far as holy name is concerned, there is no rules and regulations. And also, as far as holy name is concerned, there is no beginning or end. You can do it anytime, anywhere, in any conditions, isn't it? So, there is a famous prayer from Tyagaraja about that. He says that, this word Rama, it has two meanings. He explains there that Rama means one who creates also Ramam, pleasure, inside. A woman can also be called Rama in that way. And Rama is also another name of Brahmam, Araga Brahmam. So, knowing very well that you are addressing the Brahmam, that he says there, let me call Ramachandra in that way. And so, one who has known the Tattvam, the principle behind it, he will know that the all the secrets of the devotees mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He says there, all of them are saying to Krishna, there is only one thing. What do they say? They say to Krishna that give us bhakti. In other words, get rid of vibhakti from inside. Get rid of the vibhakti from inside. That is how they mention this in the Bhagavatam also. So, when we go through this chapter, you will come to understand bhakti from a different angle altogether. Proper bhakti, when it is understood, all you can say is this process is the process what Krishna would like us to follow in this age particularly. But on the other hand, if we water it down to our own understanding of bhakti, then whole thing will go. So this bhakti, what Krishna has spoken here in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 12th chapter, you will see verse by verse when we go through, that it is so centered around surrender. It's matkarmakadam alparamam albhakta sangavarjidaha nurvairaha sarvabhudeshu yasamavedi pandava. It is that person Krishna calls as a devotee. And that is what Krishna likes to see in us as devotees, more than all the other things what we do. So we'll stop for about 15 minutes and we'll continue after that. So, for jnanam, in order that the jnanam to grow, shraddha must be there. And in order that the bhakti should grow, surrender must be there, sharanagati, in other words. Vritrasura said this in the Bhagavatam. If you look, you will see there. Na naga prishtam na japarameshtyam na sarva bhaumam na rasadibhatyam na yoga siddhira punarbhavam va samanja sattva virahayakankshe. That word there, samanjasa, that's a very important word in the Bhagavatam. Na naga prishtam na japarameshtyam, in the 6th canto, Vritrasura's prayers to Krishna. Na naga prishtam na japarameshtyam na sarvabhaumam na rasadhibatyam na yoga siddhira punarbhavam va samanja sattva virahayakankshem. He says there, I don't want anyone else except samanjasa. He uses the word samanjasa. because Krishna, he says that Krishna is samanjasa. Krishna is samanjasa. What does word samanjasa mean? Samanjasa means everything is in Krishna, all together. In other words, we already have him with us. We have got Krishna with us. Not that one day he is going to come to us and now you can have me. No, he's already there in us. That is why he's Siddha, Siddhatvarika Sarvada. This we should never forget. Krishna is already with us, inside us, isn't it? So, samanjasatva virahaya kankshe. Whereas he says here that sarvarasodhadi, in other words, he is our soul, Krishna is present inside of the soul. He says there, after giving up this, what is inside me, I completely ignore him. And then I am praying to you, give me heaven planets, give me admission to Vaikuntha planets, give me here, give me there. When he is present here right now with me here inside me. And also praying to Krishna, I don't want another birth or these things. So knowing all these things, chant the holy name. That's what he's saying here. So it's not important when I'm going to get liberated or when I'm going to realize the self. All those things are not important. Give up all the desires, but continuously chant the holy name. That is Bhagavata Dharma. In Bhagavata Dharma, it is like that. Jnana Margam will definitely define that realize now here in this body. Although we discuss all these things, it doesn't mean that's going to be our goal. We discuss this because to understand that what Krishna is saying like this in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But when it comes to, we are now concerned about Bhagavata Dharma. That is our business, isn't it? We are not into Jnana Margam or Karma Margam or anything, because that is a different way of approach. There, Shraddha is required, Jnana Margam. In Bhakti Margam, Sharanagati is required. In Bhagavata Dharma, which is where you bring Karma Yogam into it, Bhakti into it, also Jnanam to some degree, all that is makes it that in a, what is called as Bhagavata Dharma, what we are discussing now. In Srimad Bhagavatam is centered around Bhagavata Dharma, not centered around only Jnanam or Bhakti. It's Bhagavata Dharma, that's a message from Bhagavata, isn't it? And that's what we discussed so far, what Bhagavata Dharma means, isn't it? So, he mentions there that in order to know that Bhagavata Dharma, what does this Bhagavata Dharma means? We saw this before, that if you do the karma in a particular way, as we discussed, without ragadvesham, attachment aversion, without kartrutva bhoktrutva, knowing well what is good for others, hitam, and not out of blind love for someone on a bodily level, but not knowing very well what is good for others and doing that thing. To that, if you add the holy name, chanting the holy name, it is Bhagavata Dharma. That is how Bhagavata Dharma to define, isn't it? Bhagavata Dharma, if you read those verses, Kavi Maharshi's words in the Bhagavatam, King Nimi Navayogi Samvadam, isn't it? That discussion, the 12 verses first talks about Bhagavata Dharma. And Bhagavata Dharma, if you summarize it, it is like this. It comes out this way. No attachment aversion, no ragadvesham, no kartrutva bhoktrutvam, I'm the doer, I'm the enjoyer, and no attachment aversion, and doing the right thing in this world, whatever we have to do, what actually comes to due to prarabdham through this body, and if you are living at home, whatever activities to be done at home, if all this is done without any attachment aversion, ragadvesham, or kartrutva bhoktrutvam, doer enjoyer, and if you add the holy name to it, it becomes Bhagavata Dharma. So all the great devotees, you will notice that they executed Bhagavata Dharma in that way, that they say that they started chanting the holy name along with their activities. Now these activities, whether it is at kitchen, in the kitchen you are doing, or if you are working in the office, or you are doing everywhere, it has to be brought in. Because whatever happens, to chant the holy name. Whatever happens, to chant the holy name. To keep it as the priority above everything else. Because in order that our Bhagavata Dharma to complete, that holy name is necessary there. Mm-hmm. Is necessary there. So, if you look into all the great devotees, how they executed Bhagavata Dharma, you remember Tukaram's case, we saw how it was. He was executing Bhagavata Dharma. He was opening his shop. Only thing is, when devotees came, he got pulled by them that he will go for a Harinam, leaving the shops open there. And his wife has to come and close the shop in the evening, because he has completely lost in the, absorbed in the chanting the holy name. So he got absorbed like that. Tyagaraja had the same problem. He got into the same difficulty. Tyagaraja talks about that with Ramchandra, about this. He has a conversation between. His whole kirtanam, all famous Tyagaraja's hymns, what he has written in the music, is all conversation between Ramchandra and Tyagaraja. Tyagaraja says to him that all the Sanskrit prayers you will see, very easy to write. It's not difficult to write poetry in Sanskrit, but it's not, especially the devotional songs. You will see like Krishna, 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 Pahimam. Rama, 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 Pahimam. It has become a verse then, isn't it? Rakshamam, Pahimam, Palayamam. If you add these to some holy names, it has become a verse then. It's not so difficult that way. But here it's not like that. Tyagaraja's prayers are complete conversation between Krishna, between Ramchandra and Tyagaraja. That's the whole conversations here. And that conversation also is very funny. Whole conversation is completely complaints about what Ramchandra is doing to him. He complains against him. He says to him, I'm talking to that Ramchandra who is sitting inside my heart. I'm talking to him, he says. If he wants to listen to it, he can listen, he says. So many, and he says, in one kirtanam, he says, my brother is giving me a lot of trouble, he says. You remember the story of Tyagaraja we mentioned before, that you have to see how devotees had to go through, what all situations they have been put into. Tyagaraja, from an early day in life, early days in life, had no attraction for anything in this world. So absorbed in singing the glories of Ramchandra. And brother thinks that he is just a burden. Parents died, and that naturally the responsibility fell on the elder brother. So elder brother was agreed to take care of him, but there was no income. There was no income. Brahmanas, isn't it? No income from anywhere. And he had some knowledge of performing some rituals, you know, puja and things like that. So he'll go and do all that and get some money from that, dakshina, like some of the people do. They'll get money and make a living out of it. That was his whole income. He had nothing else to think about. So what he was doing was, his brother, that was a very meager income, isn't it? The dakshina what they got was very meager. He had to live on that. So they'll perform some sacrifices, like many wealthy families will invite them to perform a puja at home or some ceremony at home. Things like that, he'll go and do it, and he'll get some little money from that, and he has to maintain the family with that. And Tyagaraja won't go to work, do anything. He's just busy sitting at home and discussing with Ramchandra. That was his happiness life. Somebody suggested to his brother, that's because you have not done the right thing, you should get him married, and then everything will be okay. A lot of people think like that, because they not got married, that's why all the problems in life. And exactly same thing happened to Ramchandra and Tyagaraja also, that they thought that everything will be sorted out once he's married. So they got him married. The brother got him married. After getting married, situation changed in the sense, earlier it was only Tyagaraja sitting at home and performing bhajans. Now both wife also joined. So in other words, the brother had to maintain both of them now. So one day brother called them and told them that I'm stopping all your benefits now. It's finished. Now you go and find out yourself, earn yourself. So Tyagaraja says, all right, I'll go outside. And he tied a pot on his neck, empty pot, and took this thing that, what they call the one which you play, Ganjara or something they call it, isn't it? Singing songs of Ramchandra goes on Unchavurti in the whole Agraharam, in the Brahmanas enclaves. That's called Agraharam, Brahmanas enclaves. They live one next to each other, whole groups. So he goes there begging for food. and he won't even look at it, what they are putting into it, into the pot. They know Vinchakurti was accepted at that time. It was quite like Sudama did also same thing, isn't it? So Sudama's wife went on Vinchakurti, she got collected food. Anyway, so Tyagaraja and his wife both go singing songs, Ramachandra's glorification, and the people are giving this a handful of rice or a handful of dal. Everything will be put into this pot. He won't even look at it. After, when he knows that there is sufficient in the pot, he'll come home, he'll stop everything, and then cook that, whatever rice and dal was there, and they will eat together. They'll share it. And that's how they maintain their body. So, and was not contributing anything to the family. And this poor brother, he was also not knowing what to do. He was an ordinary person. In the sense, he felt the responsibility maintaining them, and Ramachandra was, and Tyagaraja was not showing any inclination to work. So both of them continued 24 hours bhajan at home, kirtan and bhajan at home, no stoppage at all. So then this person who advised Tyagaraja's brother that everything will be okay when they have a child, it will be okay. you just have to wait, he said. And then in due course of time they had a child also. The child was gone, now the Sankirtan party has become big. There was no change at all. And finally the brother told him, look, you can't stay here. We have to partition ourselves. You go your way, I go my way. He couldn't handle it anymore. He had enough power. Enough is enough, as they say. That by then he decided to part each other. So Ramachandra, in spite of all these things what happened, Tyagaraja won't go to work. Tyagaraja says that, why should I work when Ramachandra, my emperor, is the king? He is such a wealthy person. Why should I work? And I'm not asking for anything, he said. This was his position. So he wrote so many songs about Ramachandra, famous as they are, so famous they are. If you don't sing a Ramachandra song related to Ramachandra, no Carnatic music concert is complete. That is his position there. So, such a great personality he was. So, in all of them, not once he told Ramachandra he wants anything. Never expressed any desire. And so, here, he mentions here that his attitude was, I am completely managed by Ramachandra. Why should I be worried about anything? It is his responsibility, not mine. So, complete was the surrender that you can see here. There's one similarity with Bhagavatam and Tyagaraja's approach. He says here that the finest thing is that no desires inside. No desires inside Tyagaraja. So one day when he kept on complaining about all his problems in life, never asked him to change it or anything, he told Ramachandra, brother is giving me trouble like this, and sister-in-law is complaining about me, and as usual in every household these things happen, and it happened there also. About that time Ramachandra told Tyagaraja, you tolerate everything, he said. So Tyagaraja says to Ramachandra, you keep on telling me you tolerate everything. He says, all the great devotees, they have great power of tolerance. They have this great capacity for tolerance. So why did he say like that? Because that is the process. Toleration. Tolerating everything. Sahanam sarva dukhanam apradigara purvagam chinda vilavarakitam sa tidiksha idigadyate. That is the definition of tidiksha. We say tidiksha, isn't it? Tidiksha is like this. Sahanam sarva dukhanam. Dukham will come in life in different forms. As we go through life, you will see that different kinds of distress will come one way or the other. So-called friendship, society, that will all go. It's not going to stay forever. And as we get our body also becoming helpless with illnesses and all that, there is nowhere you can look forward to any kind of happiness in this world. But even in that distress, sahanam, to bear with it. Sahanam sarva dukhanam. And when distress comes, apradigara purvagam, without any revenge towards anyone, that somebody else is responsible for that, but rather accepting that it's my own prarabdham, that is, I am suffering through now. Chinda vilaparahitam. never thinking about chinda. Chinda means thought, thinking about it and crying. Vilaparahidam. Sa tidiksha idigadhyade. That is how tidiksha is defined in the Shastra. And Viveka Chudamani, you will see this definition. So Tyagaraja says there, whether you do anything or not, I am absorbed in the name, Ramchandra's name. That keeps me going, he says. And he continues that. So there you can see, if you look into Sri Narada Maharshi's childhood, exactly the same things have happened there also. So because if there is desires inside, behind the desires there must be an ego. A person must be there. Because as soon as you say there is desire, that means you have to ask the question, who has the desire? And naturally the ego will be there. And if you have that ego inside, difficult to get the vastu. Vastu? Difficult. Because our attention will always be in the world outside. So when it's not there, Krishna says there, in the Bhagavatam, it mentions like this. If you remember, when Sri Narada Maharshi, it is in the first canto itself, when the sages came, and Sri Narada Maharshi is talking to Vedavyasa Maharshi about his childhood, what happened, that he was 5-year-old boy, and mother was looking after him, he didn't know where the father was. Mother was serving in a wealthy Brahmana's house, and it so happened for Chaturmasyam, a few sannyasis arrived there, and Narada Maharshi had no one else to play with. Whenever he found somebody new, he naturally got attracted to them. And he started observing what these sannyasis were doing in their Chaturmasyam. And he saw that they were getting up very early in the morning, and after their daily routine things, they spoke about Krishna. Isn't it? Krishna's, particularly Krishna's childhood pastimes. And Sri Narada Maharshi heard all this, got attracted to it, and that is how he was introduced into Krishna consciousness. Sri Narada Maharshi comes to Krishna consciousness in that way. And after that he says that when they left, after the Chaturmasyam, when they went away, I felt immense grief inside, because I started thinking, they were talking about someone, about Krishna particularly, where will I find him? Vedavyasa Maharshi asked a question at that time to Narada Maharshi, how did you spend your time in their absence, when they went away? There's a verse in the Bhagavatam, Namanyanandasya hadatra bappadan guhyani badrani kritani jasmaran gam paryadam tushtamanam gadaspraha kalam pradikshan vimato vimal saraham. It's a famous verse in the first canto, 5th chapter. That 5th chapter is important. Why? Vyasa Narada Samvadam. It is between Vedavyasa Maharshi and Narada Maharshi talking to each other. How Narada Maharshi came to Krishna consciousness. Sometimes you see this, isn't it? In the publications they say, how I came to Krishna consciousness. And then somewhere else you read, how I left Krishna consciousness. Another magazine is saying, how I left Krishna consciousness. It was a big escape for him. Had enough of this Krishna consciousness, he says. Another one says, how I came to Krishna consciousness. So here Narada Maharshi is saying, how he came to Krishna consciousness. He says here, Namanyanandasya hadatravapadan guhyani badrani kritani jasmaran. These verses are very important, because in very few words, Vedavyasa has read the heart of Narada Maharshi and put it very nicely there. Guhyani badrani kritani jasmaran gam paryanam tushtamana gadaspriha kalam pradekshan vimato vimal saraha. That is that state. What does it mean? It says here that how did you establish your relationship with Krishna? This was the question from Vedavyasa. Vedavyasa's question, how did you manage after that? After they have gone, after the Chaturmasyam they have gone. And what happened to you after that? And that was, he wanted to know. He was very curious to find out. A young boy, 5-6 years old, and suddenly he got some salsangam through that sages and got interested in spiritual life, and they gone. And after that what happened? It's an interesting question, isn't it? In all our life also same thing happens. Suddenly we get to know a great personality. We get to know from him the value of Krishna consciousness.
After he has gone, what happened? Everybody asked a question that. Same question we have to ask ourselves also, isn't it? That somebody, a great personality comes and talks to you about the importance of Krishna consciousness. And you felt a great, many, many devotees will vouch this, what they had happened to them after they met Prabhupada. That they felt something in life, but when he left, what happened after that? People don't want to say what happened after that. Because if they say that, it's so much distress also for many people, what happened after that. So there you can see that what happened to Sri Narada Maharshi when the sages left. When the sages left, they told him, just chant the holy name. Just chant the, and chant it continuously, non-stop. Chant the holy name. But one thing they told him, that don't put your faith in anything else in this world. In other words, that not taking shelter of anything, completely surrender to Krishna. Because unless you leave your grip on other things, you won't be able to hold on to Krishna. That's the way it is. This transition stage is a very difficult stage. We have not left our grip in this world. We are still holding on to things in this world. Shelter of the family, shelter of the money, assets, job, job security, society, social life. We have not left that. And we want to get hold of Krishna's shelter. That won't happen. Till we leave this, we can't get the other one. That's the way it is. Unfortunately, it is like that. So, till that happens, what shall I do? He said. Narada Maharshi asked that question to them. So they said to them, chant the holy name continuously till then. So their approach was this: let the hands do their job, let the legs do its work, let the body do whatever it has to do, but continuously chant the holy name. Honestly, what happens at that time? That is what is mentions here. Namani anandasya hatatrabha padhan guhyani badrani kritani jasmaran gamparyanam tushtamana gadaspraha kalam pradikshan vimato vimal saraha. Sri Narada Maharshi says to Vedavyasa Maharshi that because I was chanting the holy name all the time, continuously, I was able to remember everything what was told. Because of chanting the holy name, I remembered everything what the sages have spoken to me in that satsangam. What they spoke, because every day he was hearing about Krishna. And everything they told me, I was able to remember, because guhyani badrani kritani jasmaran, that smaranam, memory, remembrance, was in me all the time, he says. So, what was that remembrance? Remembrance was like this, that I am Krishna's servant. I am Krishna's servant. Only Krishna is there, only Krishna's shelter is there. This has happened to me very strongly inside. Actually, the meaning of all chanting the holy name is also that. Actually, handing over to Krishna the responsibility, not holding anymore with us. So, Krishna is the only reality, isn't it? Krishna alone exists. And only Krishna is there, I am not there. That means false ego is not there, only Krishna is there. That means, so all Vedantam philosophy also is covered in that words. But, and it is the most simplest sadhana, simplest one also. And if you do not want any chittavritti to come intensely inside, we have to develop any attachment or aversion anywhere. And this process, Yoga Sadhana or Vedanta Sadhana, Krishna mentions there that this process of chanting the holy name is a very powerful tool for that. Constantly chanting the holy name will help not to develop attachment or aversion anywhere. It is a way of freeing oneself from that attachment, freeing oneself from the attachment or aversion. Because if it's executed with the holy name, Bhagavata Dharmam, we will free ourselves from the other anartham. That is why chanting is an important thing. Nobody can... Some people are saying that chanting, why? I don't have time for that. But I am interested in what Krishna has got to say. In other words, they want to evaluate Krishna, what Krishna has spoken. That is not going to help. That's not spiritual life. Without chanting the holy name, not 16 rounds, 24 hours is expected of us. But at least not to put any limitations on chanting the holy name. Continuously chanting the holy name is a part of Sri Narada Maharshi's Bhagavata Dharma, what is spoken in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You will see in Vrindavanam, many, many people, they absorbed in chanting the holy name for many hours in a day, giving up all other commitments in this world. They have taken to it because they know that sadhana is so powerful to do that. And taking the shelter of that, not absorbing in any other activity, satisfied with minimum things in life, they are unable to continue with their life in this world. So Krishna mentions there that Guhyani Badrani Namani Anandasya Hadatravapadan. Namani Anandasya. Unlimited names Krishna has. Isn't it? Namani Anandasya. There is no limit to Krishna's names. Govinda, Gopala, Damodara, Madhava. Endless it is. Any of those names, Krishna says, Narayanamurti says, are good to chant the holy name. To chant the holy name. It's only not that only Hare Rama, Hare Krishna alone is the holy name. All other Krishna's names are as powerful as any other name. So, Namani Anandasya, many, many names Krishna has. Hata Trapa Patan means, Trapa means shame. That means you are able to chant the holy name without any shame. You don't feel while chanting the holy name, you feel your connection with Krishna. That is the most important thing. Feel your connection with Krishna. So, and at the same time, he mentions there, Kalam Pradikshan Vimato Vimalsaraha. He was waiting for time to take its own time. Let it take its own time. He didn't put any time factor into it. Kalam Pradikshan. Let's see what happens over a period of time. Kalam Pradikshan Vimato Vimalsara. Vimalsara means that he had no competition with anything. Matsaryam. Matsaryam was not there. He was not competing with another devotee or anything. He was on his own, so there was nobody to compete with. Normally, when we come to spiritual life, immediately we bring all the garbage with us into spiritual life also. Then we want to compete with each other. Isn't it? I am better devotee than you. I have to convince the world that I am better than you. Isn't it? That is Matsaryam. Matsaryam comes from that. Vimalsara means one who is free from that Matsarya Buddhi or competition nature. So, here, he says here, all I was absorbed in Kritani Jasmaran Gampariyadam. I continue my journey in this world, wandering around without any specific destination, no goal where he is going. Gampariyadam. I just wandered around everywhere, he says. Not thinking where he's going to get at the end or no particular specific destinations. He was walking everywhere. Gam Pariyadam, how? Tushtamanaha, always satisfied with what I had. When I wanted food, I ate what I got on the way. When I wanted water, I went into the river and took the water and drank it. Gam Pariyadam, Tushtamana, Gadaspraha. Gadaspraha means freedom from any kind of I'm somebody important in this world. That is how Narada Maharshi told. If you look at that verse and look at the verse in the Shikshashtakam, you will see it's the same thing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has spoken. Only thing is, it is in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's words in the Shikshashtakam, it is Narada Maharshi's words in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Practically, in message, it is one and the same. Isn't it? If you look into the Shikshashtakam, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, what does he say? Trinara Vishuni Chena, Tarora Visahishnuna, Amanina Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. Where does that come from? It comes from Srimad Bhagavatam. It is Srinarada Maharshi's words, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has put it in the Shikshashtakam. That's where it's coming from. So, Srinarada Maharshi is the authority on Krishna consciousness, isn't it? Greatest Bhagavatam, or
or you can say that he is in the Parambara also, if you look after Brahma, Vedavyasa Maharshi, Narada Maharshi, then Vedavyasa. That's how it comes, isn't it? Brahma, Narada, Vyasa. So those words, that is why Srimad Bhagavatam is the most authoritative on all aspects of Krishna consciousness. There is no question about that. So mentions here that the nirvairaham galam pradikshan vimano vimalsaraham. There is no hate or love towards anyone, but still chanting the holy name and remembering Krishna. And if you keep remembering Krishna, where is the question of hating anyone? Nirvaira sarvabhudeshu. In the last words, Krishna mentions that, isn't it? Mal karma krita mal parama mal bhakto sangavarjidaha nirvaira sarvabhudeshu yasama medhi pandava. That nirvairam, that nature, has to come. Krishna gives a lot of importance to this nirvairam. Nirvairam means, if we have even a slight trace of enmity inside towards any other person, living entity, then that is not nirvairam. Nirvairam, you will see, niravaksham munim shandam nirvairam samadarshinam. Krishna says, a proper devotee, Krishna expects this nirvairam inside. So, here, how one should chant the holy name, Srinath Maharshi is saying, vimato vimalsaraha. Vimato vimalsara means, he is not thinking that I am chanting my rounds. No such thoughts inside. He is just chanting. It is happening through him. Because even the thought that I am chanting is false ego. Even the thought I am chanting is false ego. Is false ego is saying this, I am chanting. So, what is devotee's approach, devotee's mood? Devotee's consciousness says that till I leave this body, I have to live in this body. Till I leave this body, till my prarabdham is finished, I have to live in this body. This is devotee's consciousness. Devotee never thinks, I've done this, I've done that. That is not a devotee's realization. Devotee's thought is always to think that till the prarabdham is over, I have to live in this body. If you look into Narada Maharshi's words there, you will see this. Arabdha karma narvanam nyapadal panjabaudhika. He says there, isn't it? Arabdha karma means prarabdha karma. Till prarabdha karma, Vedavyasa is asking him what all happened. And Narada Maharshi is saying, I kept on going like this. And one day, Vedavyasa, my prarabdham was over and it dropped down. The body went. That is how, he didn't say I died. He didn't say like that. Instead of saying that, he told Vedavyasa, I carried on like this, as mentioned in this verse. Guhyani badrani kudani jasmaran gam pariyanam tushtamena gadaspraha kalam pradikshan vimato vimal saraha kalam pradikshan. For the time to come, so that my prarabdham is over. Because prarabdham and time is connected. At appropriate time, your prarabdham will be over and then the body will go. And that is how he replied Vedavyasa. He says to Vedavyasa, what happened to us at some point in time, in the course of time, my prarabdham finished. When prarabdham was over, what happened? What happened to us? Arabdha karma narvanam. When I prarabdham was nyabadal panjabaudhigaha. Nyabadal means it fell off. What? Panjabaudhiyam. Panjabaudhiyam means material body. It fell off. He said, just like the snakes, when they lose their cover, the skin, outer skin, they leave them and they go, isn't it? Every few months or something, that white cover on top of their body, it leaves behind and the snakes go. So, when Narada Maharshi is answering this, it gives an impression that so like a snake loses its cover, he left his body and went. This is realization. Nyabadal panchabhautikam. So, that is a devotee. So, till that time happens, I have to do something in this world, he says. He says, I have to do something in this world. I knew that till death, till this happens, I have to manage this body, something with it. But one day it will drop off somewhere. So I had to do something. So, and there was no competition either. I was not there to compete with anybody. And in other words, in spiritual life, that is the approach. You don't sit in the front, you sit in the back. But so here, who is qualified to hear Srimad Bhagavatam? That is the process. That's why in the beginning of the Bhagavatam it says Nirmat Saranam Satam Vedyam, isn't it? So when the prarabdham is over, we will go where we have to go, isn't it? Anandasya hatatrava padhan. There is no disturbances in the mind. Narada Maharshi says there, because there is no shame. Trapa means shame. Some people are a little bit shame, feel shame to chant the holy name. They feel shame. Sometimes you see people, even if you tell them to chant, they won't chant. They'll feel a little bit reservation about that. So Guhyani means here, Guhyani, you mentioned few things here. Guhyani, Badrani, Kritani, Chasmaran. Three things he mentions there. While remembering, Guhyani, Badrani, Kritani. What does that mean? Guhyani means, Guhyani means he is reflecting on the truth. Why? Guha means a cave. One who is occupied inside the cave, Guhyani. That's how that word came. Remember in the Bhagavad Gita you have that Rajavidya Rajaguhyam. That Guhyam comes from this Guha, cave inside. And that is in reference to the understanding of the Tattva, Guhyani. And is, in other words, he is reflecting the Jnanamargam part of it. Srinarada Maharshi is talking about it there. That by chanting the holy name, I started getting realizations. All type of things. This all can happen with the holy name. That realizations can come in the form of our identity, who we are, what we are. All these thoughts will, natural way, it will come from inside. Badrani, Badrani means that the holy name at the same time, Krishna's name, Krishna's form and Krishna's pastimes. All that is covered in the, or which includes even the pastimes of the great personalities, great devotees also. So, Kritani. So, and Navanyanan, Guhyani, Badrani, Kritani. Kritani is the one referring to pastimes, Krishna's activities, Krishna's Leela or pastimes. Badrani means his name and the form, and Katha related to Krishna's pastimes. And these Kritani does not mean only what we have heard from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Kritani also includes whatever experiences Sri Narada Maharshi had when he heard from the sages. Those things also. For example, remember this, that anything we experience in spiritual life, whatever impact it has in us, in our consciousness, that is the truth. That may not be a fact, but that is the truth. That is why the difference between the fact and the truth. Fact is something what newspaper reports. Fact is something what you have read in the paper or through the radio you heard or television you have heard. That's what may be fact, but that is not the truth. Why we say like that? Truth is that thing. In Maya's world, so many things are going on. You can't take that as the truth. Truth is that thing, whatever that has influenced you in your spiritual realization, self-realization, which has lifted you up towards closer to the truth, that is the truth. Everything else is Maya. That is not truth, that is fact. You can call it as fact, but it is not truth. I hope you understand that subtle difference there between the fact and the truth. So, here, in spiritual life also, when we hear, if something has influenced your spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness, and it has brought you closer to the truth, then it is the truth. That is the truth. Because you got closer to the truth. But if something may be fact, but it may not be the truth. Like we hear so many facts in this world, but that's not the truth. There's a difference there, and that you have to very clearly think about it and get yourself clear. There are so many things like this in the Shastram, where you will know that what we address in the normal way as something like love, we talked about. The love, what in the general sense when you address, use love, and the love in terms of spiritual life is completely different. Is it not? Similarly, here also, fact and the truth are different. Fact and truth are different. Fact is, anything is a fact. For example, whatever you read, you may say something is a fact. Scientists are telling us so many things, may be a fact, but it's not the truth, because none of them has brought me anywhere closer to the truth. Truth is Krishna, the soul. If anything has brought you closer to the truth, even if it is not a fact, it is the truth. That's also there in that. It's a thing which requires a lot of analysis, various levels. You have to look at that and come to your own proper understanding on that. So here, Kritani means not only, for example, we hear about the pastimes of great devotees, isn't it? Now, if by hearing about that, if it has helped you to get closer to the truth, it is the truth. And by hearing that, you don't go and historically verify them, whether they are truth or not. That is why when you study Puranam, you don't do research in Puranam. If you start doing research in Puranam, you will find, sometimes people want to find out the date, how it happened, the time sequence, and the order in which it happened. Because sometimes you will see, when you read different Puranam, one contradicts the other. One Puranam contradicts the other. Time factor also, there is problem. We'll see, this has happened now, and this happened some other time. How could you say that they were met each other? All these questions will come. So those things has to be taken out. They are looking for facts, they are not looking for truth. That is the difference. Those who are looking for facts, they are the people who start doing research in Ramayanam, Bharatam, Mahabharatam, Bhagavatam and all that. You know, the people, they are looking for facts. They are not looking for truth. If you are looking for truth, you should not mix up these two things together. So when the false ego goes away from inside, you can see here that Krishna's activities, when that false ego drops off, mentions here everything that happens in this world in a wonderful way. Sri Narada Maharshi's example is that. That's what he is saying there. He says that Namani Namanyanandasya hatatrabhapadhan Guhyani Badrani Kritani Jasmaran Gam Paryadam Tushtamanam Gadaspriha Kalam Pratikshan Vimato Vimal Saraha. That consciousness of Narada Maharshi at that time is very interesting to look at. That how he was living in this world after he got this message of Krishna consciousness from the sages. When the sages instructed him about Krishna consciousness, how he took it and how he carried away in his life after that. And that is what something very important there. Gam Paryada and Tushtamana Gadaspraha. Inside, complete satisfaction. Totally satisfied. And that is why Krishna says there, Yasama Amedi Pandava. He says in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Amedi Pandava, the last line in that 11th chapter. So, Krishna says there, that person is already reached me. Mukta Nakhalu. Because there's nothing for him to achieve anymore. Because he has the God, the subject, what he needs. So, all these things, and Krishna says here, that all you have to do in that process is to remove everything what you are not, and then Krishna comes out from inside without any more. There is no searching for the truth anymore. What is not truth, what we have accumulated inside, what is not truth. So many facts we have accumulated inside. If we get rid of the facts from inside, and then the truth will come out from there. So, and Krishna also mentions that when the karmam, activity, chittavritti, the thoughts, and the activities of the intelligence, activities of the body, everything that has been surrendered to Krishna, and when that false ego has completely gone away, if one has come to that state, that is bhakti. Krishna has spoken that.
And for such a devotee, there is no other separated from Krishna. It is Ananya Bhakti, as Krishna calls it. Ananya Bhakti, Krishna calls it. And so such a devotee, only such a devotee will accept Krishna's word seriously. When Krishna says Anityam Asukham Lokam Imam Prapya Bhajasvamam, he says that, isn't it? Material world is temporary and material world is full of misery. Come back to me, Krishna says. And a devotee who has followed and come to this state, he will have no problem in accepting that statement from Krishna. So, Imam Prapya Bhajasvamam. So, Krishna has mentioned that there in order to give us that understanding that this is the state of a proper devotee. So, when we enter into this next chapter, which we will do next class, Bhakti Yogam, this background of Bhakti, how Sri Narada Maharshi spent his time when he came to Krishna consciousness, and what was the state of that Krishna, Narada Maharshi's mood, and that is a perfect example of the Bhakti, what Krishna is going to talk about in the chapter, in this chapter. So, we'll discuss that next Saturday, and all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Srila Prabhupada.